Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Jared Scheffler.
I've not heard of this.
Never heard the intro?
You're in it. With Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody. It's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys. This is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
That's you.
I forgot that you've never heard it, probably.
It is episode 539 of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Jared's never heard our full intro.
I've never heard that till just now. That's really not that
good. You really did not know that?
I didn't know that.
I've told him that.
That it's not that good or that I did? Yeah.
Do you remember saying that when we did that?
No.
That was
in 2015. You were like episode 15, and that's
well,
when you
I remember
had
that. I was one of your early ones, but yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, so our thing was for a while, we were having, you know, most people be like, listen to Working Class Bowhunter, kind of like in our intro was. But when we first started, we were on a stint of, hey, just bash us. Bash us, say whatever, and that's what you said.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was...
We didn't even tell you to say that. You just said
that's
it.
That's what I said. So that was 7 years ago.
That's great.
So that's what we had, like, for a span of things. We just tried to get every guest to say something really bad
You've
about us.
You've used that for 7 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Welcome to the podcast,
Jared.
I know.
Yeah.
This podcast
is... Hey, when you didn't launch a video, we kept you afloat, and you still didn't tune in.
I know. Thank you, by the way.
So relevant.
Relevant.
Kept you afloat.
Kept me relevant.
Kurt Geyer here.
Eric Common.
First appearing. You're known in the podcast listenership base from just kind of being the PR guy. PR Paletta is on a podcast. What's up, buddy?
What's up, guys? My first one. Pretty excited about it.
Thanks for being here.
Hell yeah.
Then moving around the table, Garrett Schlieff.
Yes. From Grizzly Stick. So I've been building arrows and broadheads for about 20 years and building arrows for Jared. So we were kind of talking about some of the different stuff we've been up to.
We've been geeking out for a day.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot on the phone over the course of, what, five, six years, because somebody detected that I was using your stuff.
And then
you reached out to
so
me.
So you were using it before you guys even connected.
Oh, yeah. I've been... I don't know how much money and shit that I've bought from, but it was a lot. And then when I shot that giant typical, somebody, I think you told me, a customer caught that I was using.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'd never had no idea.
So this is a fun podcast. So this kind of Pierre Paletta, of course, being the PR guy that he is, was like, hey, this would be a great episode. Let's connect here. This would be a lot of fun to get everyone together and talk. It works great for us, too, because of the connection. We work with Victory Arrows on a friendship level, of course, but on a business level, too. And you have a great connection with them also.
Friendship and business. So they've been building my arrows for me for about 7 years now. So Steve and I and Jason and Nate and kind of the whole crew. Definitely, we've known each other for quite a while.
Works out perfect.
It works out great.
So let's get into it then, man. I mean, I don't really know where we start this, but let's just start japping jaws.
I never do. That's what I love about this podcast. We never know where we're going.
And we always end up listening to the intro.
And we always end up places.
Well, Eric, how lame would it be if we're like, here's your bullet points for the show. Okay,
we don't go off track. We do a handout.
Yeah, handout. Here's your pamphlet. Don't go off track. Otherwise, you're done. You know? No, it's open platform. So you have a shirt on that says Run FOC.
Correct.
And that is going, people who aren't in hunting or interested in arrows and specifics and arrow nerds aren't going to know what that means. And then you probably have people attack you with questions when you wear that shirt.
Not so much attack. Well, I'm not in the normal circuit with most of the other manufacturing guys. So I don't go to ATA. I don't go do a lot of the stuff. We're all consumer direct and have been for a long time. So we run things a little bit differently. So not necessarily attacked, but we almost do it as a big F you to kind of, you know, we believe in it, you know, don't necessarily preach it, but we believe in it. And it's just a way that we kind of like to show people that we like it. And the guys that geek out on the FOC, you know, they think it's pretty
cool. Guys are passionate about arrows, and that's a good thing. But how did you get into it? I mean, how did this all kind of roll into you being Grizzly Stick and then?
So, family business. So grew up in Alaska. My dad was a guide. We owned lodges. So grew up kind of in the industry. And he started in 1994, started Alaska Bow Hunting Supply. It was all trad. So for about a 10-year period there, we were one of the bigger trad companies. And Tabs and Gloves had the contracts with Cabela's and Bass Pro and stuff like that.
Very cool.
And just kind of got into it. Started building arrows in 98 with St. Croix Rod Company in Falls City, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And they built for us for a while. And then we bounced around through several factories. 2004, there was a big slowdown in carbon. Nobody could get it. So everybody went offshore together. So I was telling Jared just the other day, in a 10-year stint from about 2006 to 16, I was in Asia 25 times.
Wow. Oh, shit.
So you spend a lot of time trying to build this stuff, figuring out how to do it. That was one of the other reasons when Steve came and knocked on our door and said, hey, I'm interested in doing this. I'm like, man.
Steve at Victory.
At Victory, yeah. And I was like, I'd rather fly to San Diego than fly to someplace that's difficult to pronounce.
For people that follow the podcast week by week, he's talking, you know, Steve Greenwood from Victory that we did the podcast with, the ATA from India, and told all the crazy stories.
Steve will tell you some crazy stories.
Crazy shit.
Yeah, crazy stuff. So you were talking about it. So we were all trad. Made arrows tapered because we were trad guys. And when we started making arrows, the only thing we really cared about was we wanted to go stump shooting and not break arrows. Mm-hmm. That was it. There was no science or philosophy. We just wanted to break arrows. Mm-hmm. So started building arrows, and over the years it progressed and with the designs. And then by the time we got to working with Victory, we were pretty refined in what our designs were and what we wanted them to build, which was great because they're really the only guys that can build it. Mm-hmm. If you know Steve's background and the background of Victory and Mitsubishi, and there's just not a lot of places that can, with the technology, that can build this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize until we talk about it on the podcast, like Mitsubishi and Victory are like the same.
They're the same. They're absolutely the same. So they're a division of Mitsubishi.
Yeah, right.
So,
why is an aero company in California? It seems weird, but where it is in California.
Well, we were talking about that too. It's ironic that San Diego is the birthplace of carbon arrows. That's where all the companies came. That's where most of that manufacturing happened, in Tijuana. I was telling them the story that in 1990, I was a freshman at San Diego State University, and I walked into, at the time, it wasn't Victory. It's probably had, over the last 25 years, two or three, maybe four owners. Mm-hmm. And walked in, at the time, it was Black Eagle, not Black Eagle, Black Hawk Archery. Mm-hmm. You guys remember old Black Hawk arrows?
Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah, no, that would have been in the
He's
late,
like, no, if you don't.
No, it would have been in the late 80s, and they were probably a five-year window.
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah.
No wonder we don't remember.
And Steve was involved in all of that. So actually, when I flew down to San Diego in our first round of meetings, if we were going to work together and figure out how we were going to build this stuff, I told him a story. I said, in 1990, I walked into your guys' office as a freshman, all shy, and I couldn't believe that there's an arrow company in San Diego. And, you know, my dad had been building arrows for 2 years and walked in and said, listen, I'm studying marketing. I will work for you guys for free. I want to be an intern. And the guy behind the desk was the biggest asshole in the world. And so I told Steve that story. And he's like, I don't remember the guy's name. And Steve just laughed. He's like, oh, you know, that was Bob. Yeah, you know, they knew exactly who it was. Ironically, San Diego has been kind of that epicenter for that. Not through – it really had to do more with Tijuana. And it had to do more with aerospace engineering. All the Navy complex there.
Yeah.
So that's where all the carbon manufacturing. So that's really where it was developed. And Steve's been involved in that since the beginning.
That's so crazy.
I'd say 40 years he's been.
He didn't give himself enough credit when we did that podcast about like his background and stuff.
Crazy.
And
he just wanted to tell stories about hunting.
Yeah. He didn't give a shit about anything. Like, I mean, all cool stuff.
I didn't listen to it, but did he call pigs? Have you ever heard him call pigs?
He didn't call pigs on the podcast, but he told us you guys need to come to California and shoot some pigs with us. So
he grew up in India, professional hunting with his dad.
Yep. No, he told some of these stories, but he never did the call.
Oh, scary.
Oh, really?
Oh, scary. Like, he sounds more like a squealing pig than a squealing pig.
He talked about getting bit by monkeys, hunting tigers when you could do it, and all that shit.
So that's how we ended up. So I was mentioning before, we don't go to ATA. We're not really mainstream as far as traditional or archery company, not necessarily traditional.
Yeah.
So what happened for us is in 2008, 2009, we got into SCI for the first time. And SCI, even back then, was about a 5-year waiting list to get in. And we had just been developing some of the bigger broadheads and the arrows.
To get like a booth or something set up at an SCI show?
Yeah. So it was a 5-year waiting list even to get a booth to get in. So we finally got in and we did that once and quit ATA immediately. Mm-hmm. Started Dallas the next year, Dallas Safari Club. And that really became, for the last, 10, 15 years for us, that really became our bread and butter. Mm-hmm. I would say most people, and that's why it's great for us to do this, most people in the whitetail world never even heard of us. A lot of people outside of the U.S. never even really heard of us. In Africa and big game hunting around the world, we're pretty well known.
Yeah.
We've been doing it for a long time. We have a lot of customers with a lot of success.
Yeah, and big fucking animals.
Big stuff. So I think for us now, the last time we were counting and kind of adding up, over 2,000 Cape buffalo.
Wow.
Over 100 bull elephants.
How many giraffes?
A lot. I don't know. We don't usually count that. The big three for us in brown bears. We have well over 100 brownies.
How many giraffes?
Including the world record. Yeah, which is...
Hey, we don't know much about all that, but we know giraffes.
Yeah, we know giraffes.
I shall.
And they're amazing, right? So that's... So we've been building heavy stuff because we all came out of trad. Mm-hmm. Came out of Alaska. And we were all shooting lighter pound, 50-pound stick bows, trying to kill moose. And, if you could hit them just right, you could kill them. If you hit them just anywhere but a less than perfect shot.
It was you hit them just wrong?
It was a long day for you in the 30-06, right?
So, someday.
Someday, right? So so that's really where a lot of this came from, on the background of just trying to make equipment because of our own hunting situation. And this is where it tied in and we really started connecting, Jared and I, on the philosophies behind a lot of this, because we're both stick bow guys. We both like getting really close.
Yeah.
So it was, I don't care how much the arrow weighs and I don't care how fast it's going. I care if it penetrates. That's number one.
Right.
And then everything else kind of goes into line with that because of the situations we get in. And for me, a lot of the animals that I hunt a lot of the bigger stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was like, and I don't shoot heavy poundage. So I'm like, I gotta squeeze every bit out of this arrow and broadhead setup because I'm not casting it very fast.
Right.
So, that tied right into what he's doing. Now he's getting into more of this extreme stuff and higher poundage and stuff. And that's been really interesting and fascinating to me than setting up guys on a 70-pound compound.
I do want to get into as much of that as possible, Jared, with you and like what you're shooting and all that stuff. But I want to focus on arrow weights for a second because I feel like that's like the one thing people nerd out on or are concerned with or unconcerned with or eye roll on the internet, the internet.
Yeah.
What do you think is like, what's considered a light arrow? Like from your knowledge, like what's a light arrow and weight? What's a medium heavy arrow?
I would say for me,
and we're talking about hunting.
Let's go whitetail, deer, just deer in general.
Light for me would be under 450 grains.
That's light. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and I would say mid-range would be 450, and 650 and above would be higher.
Okay. Interesting.
Depending on what guys want to do and how they want to hunt.
So yeah.
That's, you know, and there's a lot of different philosophies how we'll set guys up into those arrow weights, depending on how far they shoot, what their lethal distance is, and the situations that they hunt them, you know, they find themselves
in. Yeah, yeah.
What we found is, just like in my own hunting, in your hunting,
right,
guys that are shooting lighter poundage that are getting closer are shooting much heavier than guys shooting out of an elevated platform, out of a tree stand at a known distance.
Yeah, right, you know, okay.
It becomes we don't have a lot of time to be picky. I can't wait for broadside a lot of time when I'm inside 20.
Okay, I don't want to wait for it.
I have another question.
I'm just going to chime in here
for a second. Please do.
What I learned is if you're shooting not a very good broadhead and not a very good arrow, being a flimsy arrow, whatever durability, it flexes a lot. You know, it's a weak spine. A broadside shot makes sense because of a lot of factors.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer a head-on shot. But I'm shooting really good equipment. I'm shooting a really good broadhead design. I'm shooting a really heavy arrow. And now my a lot can go wrong on a broadside. Sure, it's the biggest kill zone in theory, but reactions of an animal, which you can't predict. And that was a light bulb moment for me in 2010 when I was editing this footage. That's the thing. Yeah, I've had a lot of hunting experience, but I got to edit all this stuff.
Right.
And I got to see what these deer are doing, and we're chasing them on the ground. We're getting in tight. Got a guy filming, and it's like 50% or better of the situations. Those animals got us pegged. We don't have much time. And broadside deer, they're the most – it's the most difficult shot that I've found in those scenarios to predict what that animal's going to do. I've seen them at 35 yards drop 2 inches. I've seen them drop what looks to be 14 to 16 inches.
Yeah.
Both high-tense animals. How can I – I can shoot 12 rings all day long. And that was an eye-opening moment, and it pissed me off because I was all precision-based archery back then.
Yeah.
But I was like, unless I know exactly what that animal's going to do, and – I've got multiple scenarios where, well, this one dropped 6 inches. That one dropped 14. That one dropped 2. They're all high tense. How am I going to know?
You don't. Right.
You don't. You don't. And I watched this arrow fly through the air out of a 70-pound compound. And that animal didn't start reacting until I figured the arrow was 15 yards out of the bow. This one particular one was 26 yards away, this deer. And that he had us pegged, but he didn't start reacting until the arrow was 15 yards out of the bow. And, you know, you can go frame by frame in video.
That's 60
so you can run the
frames per second.
So it's like, okay, I did the math. In 7 to 10 inches of arrow travel, he can drop up to 1.5 to 2 inches. That's your 12 ring right there.
That's so crazy.
Now, his first instance that he starts, his back line starts dropping, it's only going to probably drop 1/4 to 1/2 inch. But the next frame of video, which would be 30 frames a second, so 1/30 of a second, he'll go from, like, maybe dropping 1/2 inch to 1 inch. And it'll progress into the next frame will be maybe 1.25 inches. And then pretty soon you're getting 1.5 inches of drop on the next frame. So 7 to 10 feet of arrow travel. I'm like, I can't put all my eggs in this basket of accuracy precision anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it because I've seen too much truth of situations, not in hunting. Sure. Range, target, great.
Yeah.
And I was all precision accuracy based back then.
I'm hitting the dot.
I need to go back to, and I went down this pathway with penetration and things way back 20 years ago, but this is 2010, so I was seeing that 20 years ago. Then I kind of went a little bit of a different direction, just playing around like we all do, right?
Yeah.
Try different things.
Something different.
Then obviously there's a lot of things. I left a compound because I loved getting close to whitetails, and I realized not only the compound bow with the way it's designed today, along with how I was shooting that compound bow, is really handicapping me.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to what I visioned a longbow becoming. But it's a long pathway. The type of archery I do is a long pathway. But if I master that, I have ultimate in all the pillars, what I call pillars. Like, that's going to let me be the deadliest I can possibly be once I'm inside of that range. It doesn't give me extreme range like a compound did.
Right.
So, I mean, I...
So,
I
one thing I want to bring up, because I know if I don't bring it up now, I'm going to forget. And then I know that people are going to comment it on TikTok, because the best hunters in the world are on TikTok. I don't know if you guys knew that or not.
Oh, I
just learned.
They know the most.
They know the most. Yeah. They've killed the most deer. Yeah. We haven't killed shit compared to the TikTok hunters.
Yeah.
So... we all need to really listen to their podcast and watch all their hunting videos and see all their posts about the big bucks they've killed.
I've never been on TikTok once in my life, so I've heard of the app.
Imagine what you could know.
That sounds funny, but I haven't.
Imagine what you could know. You're missing out.
I'd know so much more.
You'd be way better than Jared Scheffler, the fucking biggest.
Jared Scheffler 2.0.
Sounds like I'd be following a set of methodologies set up by other people rather than just doing my own thing.
You'd be your own god of TikTok hunting knowledge. Okay, getting to it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I know someone, we're talking Arrow Wade and shit like that, and I know this question's going to come up, so I'm asking it so it's out there, is guys who shoot heavy arrows are just, that's just their excuse to take bad, unethical shots.
Terrible. That's false.
Here's
in my
the thing,
opinion.
Though. You gotta define what is the term unethical.
Okay, let me go this way.
No.
Frontal.
Okay,
facing away shots.
My opinion, and Garrett can chime in on this more because he's got a lot of reports from bigger game animal. I'm more whitetail based, right?
Yeah, right.
So let's. This is good dynamic here.
Now, I'm asking this question through the internet. This isn't Kurt Geyer's question.
Okay.
For the record.
All right. So it's all on video. 2010. That same season. I ended up accidentally shooting one frontal. He had me pegged. He was about 20, 25 yards. And I had the pin right where it needed to be, I figured, for that shot. But I was waiting for the deer to turn. Perfect broadside.
Yeah, right.
And I've even caught myself in recent times because it becomes a methodology. Like, perfect broadside, quote unquote. You know, I've caught myself saying it. And I... How many hunters have passed up shots
because of that?
Well, you just
exactly.
It gets ingrained in your head.
And what happened is I had my finger on the trigger because that's how I shot. Get your finger on the trigger. You get that bow drawn, get it on there, so you're not panicking. And you know that's how I shot. Well, I was at full draw for a long time, and my finger eased off of that trigger, and I caught it, and I was like, "Get back on there." Well, I was shooting a fairly, you know, it was stiff enough I could get my finger on there without it going off. But I put a little too much pressure, and the bow went off. I was like, son of a bitch. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and I was not shooting a good broadhead for that type of shot, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. For one, it was a mechanical. I was shooting Scott's left-handed bow. And that's what he had it set up with.
I gotcha.
But, you know, I gave him like an hour, and I heard from all the magazines and blah, 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 frontal, da-da-da-da-da. Well, it was... immaculate blood trail. The deer obviously piled up.
Yeah.
You know, right out of sight.
Yeah, frontal's
literally
definitely
said
a
it on video.
Shot if you put it in the right spot.
I literally said it on video. I might have to reevaluate my thinking on this head-on shot. So then, obviously, it's like, okay, this broadhead did perform in that particular case, but I already know, like, it's going to fail in certain cases.
Well,
I'm going to go with a good quality setup, enough arrow weight, right broadhead design. Now that becomes the most lethal shot you can put on an animal,
right.
And you don't have to factor in the reaction. See, dead man zone, that's generally where people hit and lose deer a lot of times.
For sure,
If their broadhead doesn't fail and their arrow doesn't fail, the most common place they're going to hit and not recover that animal is going to be that zone. Well, I don't have to think about on a head-on deer, because if you watch any whitetail that reacts to an arrow coming in, their front always drops much more and ahead of timing than their ass. Their ass will be hanging in the air, and they'll already have 6 inches drop on the front.
That opens up more vitals.
And eventually their ass begins to drop, but it doesn't drop as much as their front.
Right.
And so the timing and the rate, you don't have that to think about. You don't have if they take a step forward, no big deal. So it's a smaller kill zone in terms of size.
Right, like right and left, but up and down.
If you're shooting an arrow that goes through that, it's over. Yeah. I mean, you cut enough material in there, you hit them high shoulder on a head-on shot. If your arrow and broadhead doesn't divert and it keeps that direction, it's going to come out between their legs on the belly side, even if it hits them high shoulder because of the rate of drop their front. Does that make sense? So there's no more dead man zone.
Yeah.
I mean, a deer I shot last year, I don't hunt out of the trees anymore, but I come over the top on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed you that clip last night, Garrett. Mm-hmm. Now, right when I got up there, I've never been presented with that shot because I'm on the ground, right? But I'm like right over the top of this thing. And he's in his bed. And I'm coming over the top and I'm like,
six yards.
The muley?
Yeah. 4.5 yards. Exactly. But I was right over the top. Now, to a lot of guys, that would scare the shit out of them, maybe taking a shot like that. But I'm like, well, it's going to drive right through them.
Yeah.
Like, no big deal.
You're not going to sit there forever and wait for them to stand up either.
Well, you got to think about reaction of the animal, high tense situation. So it's actually a safer bet. I had to change some thinking on that years ago too. You know, I was kind of apprehensive on the bet a deer shooting. Well, it's actually a better shot than a deer that's high tense because I don't have reaction to think about.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, if you're shooting really good equipment when it comes to like enough bow poundage, draw length, arrow weight, FOC, broadhead, stiff arrow, all those things that, you know, Garrett lays out on.
Let me bounce this off you guys then.
Then that shot becomes a very ethical, the cleanest, most deadliest.
Hold on, let me get this question out. So I get that. Like, frontal is actually a good shot when you know how to do it. You see the born and raised guys shoot elk frontal all day, and they die in 10 yards. Yeah, but, okay, let me say this then. This is be the next thing that would bounce off the question I just asked. okay, you guys know your equipment. You know everything. But do you think the internet trend of heavy arrows, FOC, all this stuff makes people just, I got a heavy arrow, now I can take more shots, and people don't know their equipment? Like, is it resulting in more wounded animals? Is it not? Is it?
I would.
But here's the thing, though.
You got some stats on that.
It's a.
I'm trying to tap into that. Is what I'm trying to do.
But the definition of ethics is subjective, right?
It is,
and that's the problem that everybody struggles with. I hear this thing like, "Did you take an ethical shot?" Well,
that depends on it's all relative.
Yeah, exactly. Who defined what an ethical shot?
What's your broadhead? What's your arrow weight? What's your animal you're hunting?
Also, it changes like last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
The definition of ethical shot has changed. But the problem that I have with it is that who's defining that ethical shot?
It's a personal thing.
It's a subjective thing.
Yeah, it is. That's a very good point.
And that's what I want everyone to understand with that is that it's a subjective look at what an ethical shot is. And it's more of an opportunistic shot, in my opinion, because I have the opportunity to take the shot because of the equipment I shoot. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's no ethics involved in it because I'm confident in this shot. Now,
so you're saying people on the internet need to just think about things a little more?
Yeah, what they need to do before they start doing this, they need to start doing this.
Yes,
and that's the problem. Yeah. Is that
this is the answer? I was trying to tap into. This is great.
Well, and for whatever
thank
it's
for
worth,
that was great.
So I've hunted deer for 25 years. I've filmed quite a few of the guys shoot deer. I've been on a lot of situations. 100%. This is no bullshit. Every deer I've ever seen lost, except for one, which was a shot from me before I ever filmed, has been a broadside angle. So how perfect is it?
Well,
every deer I've ever seen lost has been a broadside shot. I've never seen one lost yet head on. Not saying it can't happen. Stuff happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had a situation where I almost lost one, and it was more head on, slightly quartering, but it was an error on my part, but I did get the deer. All I'm saying is that's in 25 years of hunting, and that's even throwing in some terrible broadheads, or what I would consider terrible today compared to what I shoot. But it's like you read the magazines in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was all catered to shitty broadheads, basically. So became the thing.
A lot of that, I think, is catered to people having less than
the great, most marketing money.
Well, less than great equipment, and people who aren't as familiar with their equipment, and people who don't have the most hunting skill. I think is probably where a lot of that like ethical debate of broadside only. You know that I think that's where that got ingrained into our heads.
Now I want you to talk about those stat reports from the like 50s or something where animals lost, because there's some stats you got on that.
And before that, and I'll get to that, but one of the things that became difficult for us on the manufacturing side is this all started in Oregon for us with elk guys. And they were shooting heavy arrows, high poundage, and this would have been 10 years ago.
And pull that mic towards you just a little bit.
And this would have been about 10 years ago. So guys were sending me lots of reports of broadheads sticking out hammies. You know, shooting 900 grain, 750 to 900 grain arrows at elk frontal, sticking out the back and you know, calling me up and like, this changes everything. This is the greatest thing ever. You need to tell everybody about this.
Yeah.
And it was the initial reaction was, are you freaking nuts?
Like, I can't do that because of the industry.
I'm a manufacturer. Right. I can't preach frontal. It goes against a lot of what I grew up with and how I learned.
You know?
So this was what happened for us is guys kept doing it. And I kept reading the reports and I kept looking at the pictures and I kept looking. And the one that caught my eye was guys kept saying the same thing. And you mentioned the guys on Hunting Public. I'm like, everybody's
born
like,
and raised.
And that was, I've never seen anything die this fast. I went in from the front. The quickest kill I ever have is exactly that.
11 seconds dead on the ground.
I had one gentleman that he said, you know, I figured that I killed that bull 7 or 8 times. I'm like, what are you talking about? 7 or 8 times. And he's like, well, I followed the path of the arrow. I came in, I nicked the trachea and the aorta or the femoral artery.
Yeah.
Right. So I hit
the aorta.
Yeah. So if you hit that, I missed the heart. But I cut everything off the top of it, so it's pumping into empty space. One lung, diaphragm, and for me, diaphragm is a huge shot for me. That's my biggest one. You touch their diaphragm, they're dead. They can't expand. They can't breathe. They're going to pass out.
Oh, yeah.
So it hits the diaphragm and comes about 2 inches. The broadhead's sticking about 8 inches out, 2 inches under his testicle out of one side. Hit that last artery on the inside of that thigh. And he said the first thing I hit him, and he buckled, and he turned. And the first thing I saw was, you know, white. He was in Colorado, white aspen trees. He just painted them, over the front. And so, and I'm like, okay. And
I get how you kill them 7, 8 times.
Right, yeah. It counted, you know, how many times any one of those. Right. And so I was like, okay, so maybe there's more to this. And really, our thinking when we were designing and manufacturing equipment, not only for ourselves, but for other people, was going to be margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to broadside shoot because I was pretty much a broadside shooter at the time.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to broadside shoot animals. And if I hit the shoulder, I was going to be okay. That was the line of thinking. And then,
which is still okay. That's great thinking too.
So,
you know,
so like, that, and that's where it came from. And then guys were doing all this other stuff that I had never thought of. For me, the first time that I did it, that I made a logical decision that I'm going to try to take an animal frontal, same thing. It was a moose. Hot damn, 20 seconds, he's on the ground. And I was like, wow. I tell people, it was interesting for me. The second time I did it was harder than the first. I was sitting there getting ready to shoot, and I'm like, there's no way this is going to work. Like, this goes, I make the stuff, right? I'm like, this just seems nuts to me. The second time was harder than the first.
Right.
And I'd seen it myself, you know, and I was like, wow, I don't know, you know, really zapped him, you know. That one didn't come out the back. It came out behind the ribs, you know, sticking out, you know, 10 inches out the backside of his ribs, you know, and they go 25 seconds, 25 yards, and boom, you know, and just like, wow, okay, I want to do that more.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but I like that. I want to do more of that. I like it a lot. Right. And
that sounds good. I'll have that.
Right.
Give me that. Subscribe.
Because for me, and a lot of the philosophy, and Jared and I talked about this a lot, for me, a lot of the philosophy came when I was younger. Hunting for me, especially bigger animals, there was a ton of anxiety. I was more worried about wounding and losing an animal than I was trying to kill an animal.
Hated it. I can't stand it.
So I was very fearful.
We just got off that whole thing with the giraffe.
Trust me.
Big
animals will take a toll on you.
Oh, you know, and you're like, can I do this? You know, can I actually, and this, you know, when you actually see how big they are. Right. Can I really do that? I mean, that's a huge animal.
4,200 pounds or something, right, Eric?
Yeah. It's huge.
So, Eric killed that. I'm like, you just killed that one for me. I'll never kill a giraffe because I just was a part of it.
Well, and that's the biggest thing because the thing was, like, I didn't have heavy enough arrows. He's like, we can't shoot a giraffe with your arrows.
You shoot him frontal?
He knew it.
Yeah, shot frontal. The guy knew it right away.
Their skin's like this thick.
Inch and
a quarter when they cut it open. Yeah. But luckily, a guy there had full length arrows.
Austin had heavy moose arrows.
That's what you need in those big guys.
Yeah.
So that was a part that changed for me. The other part is the gentleman that was doing that at the time and shooting frontal. I'm not a super accomplished rifle hunter, but I've been around guns my whole life, and he really broke it down. And I do it a lot with customers is I'll start breaking it down ethically what you can do with a rifle. And I said, so if we were hunting, let's just do elk. Or we could do whitetails, but let's do elk.
Let's do elk bigger.
Let's do elk. So
middle
you come with me and I'm guiding you and we're hunting together and you have a 22-250, right? I'm going to wait till the wind is completely calm. I want him dead broadside. I want you to tuck it in the pocket. You're right. You got to make a good shot, right? We're going to do this versus.
And it can kill him.
And you can, absolutely, you can kill him. Absolutely. Versus if we're sitting together and you have a 338 and a 250 solid in it. I'm like, I want you to rake him. I want you to break as many bones in him as you can, and I don't want him to move again. It's so ethically, with the correct equipment, what I learned in rifle hunting, you can do things much differently than you can with light equipment.
So that goes back to like, okay, broadside made sense for a lot of the equipment available.
Is it the equipment?
Because back in the 90s, you didn't have the online.
When we were kids.
Right? You didn't have direct. So you'd go into dealers, and they carried... your normal stuff. And they're carrying better equipment now.
Yeah.
They are. There's been a trend that direction.
Well, because of
but
things
back
like
in the
90s, right,
all you knew was like Muzzies and Thunderheads and
right.
light arrows. And I did that. I shot 35-55s out of 75-pound Matthews Black
Match, all you
which
could
was
get.
Like the yeah. speed monster of the day. Yeah. And it's like, I made it work. Yeah. You know, yeah. like, I did. You know, I mean.
Well, think about this, Scheffler. Like,
but
we were,
I, but
we
with broadhead design back then, I knew I was shooting light, so I. That's I already told you. I started out with like Magnus back then. I didn't start out then, but I shifted very quickly to that style of head because I'm shooting a super light arrow. It's like, well, I need some penetration,
right?
You know, so what's going to be the most aerodynamic in that particular case?
Well, think about this. Obviously, when we're kids going to like archery archery shoots, outdoor 3Ds, what is every animal set up as?
Broadside.
So yeah. it's programmed
Except
in our
the, brown,
head.
The black bear.
The black bear is standing up today, right?
Standing up.
Right? Or if you go to like some other ones, they have like a Yeti or something But think about it. It's programmed in our heads since we can walk and shoot a boat. Now, that's where that ethics can come in because as a 12-year-old shooting a old Fred Bear bow that went about 115 feet per second with my really light arrow, I needed to take that perfect broadside shot.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's. I think that's what a lot of people
makes
struggle
sense
with. Is that
it's type of equipment?
It's ingrained in our heads
right.
since we were this big, and we don't really develop and evolve out of that.
Right.
And that's
for
where
sure.
people come
right.
out with that ethics.
Yep. Like 100%. I'll get exactly. And to back that up, like somebody shooting a 50-pound, say even a compound, 50-pound compound, they're shooting a light arrow with an expandable. Do I want them taking a front-on shot?
No.
No. Hell no.
Right.
Hell no. You're out of your mind.
Yeah.
You're out of your mind. Like. Well, you throw a one blade head on the front of that. Yeah, just make sure you got it. You better
You're
be
right in there.
Like, yeah. Like, okay, you know, but that's that level of like, it's all relative. Like, what's your draw length? How much poundage?
Right.
You know, how heavy is your arrow? How much FOC? What's your broadhead design? That's huge. You know, okay, now that becomes the ultimate bow shot, the angle. Like, it becomes the most ethical shot. You know, but exactly getting back to your point, like in the 90s, you read all these articles and
and yeah,
it was just ingrained in
it. Well, you remember when the really fast bowls came out? That was cool.
That is the right thinking with a lot of that equipment.
Yep.
Yeah.
No doubt about
right?
it.
For sure.
It's the ethical thinking. That's what everybody
does. It's the ethical thinking for that amount of equipment.
That's how it got there.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly. So they weren't wrong.
But I want to get back, Garrett, what you were saying is like, doing the rifle bow comparison, like, you know, with a big caliber, take out all that shit, the bones and everything.
Yeah.
He's not walking.
Yeah.
And versus, you know, a light bullet, 22-250.
Right. Going really fast, right? 4,000 feet per second.
Just hit him in the heart. Don't touch any bone.
That's
it. Get between the ribs.
You can kill him. No problem.
And you're hoping for a lot of cavitation because of that speed.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where it's just a different philosophy for guys who want to hunt. And a lot of times I'll get kicked back and they're like, are you saying that I can't kill stuff with a slow arrow? And I'm like, absolutely not. And I always tell guys, whatever's working for you, if it's working, keep doing it. But if it's not working for you, take a look at this. Try, whatever that is. And because everybody hunts differently, different hunting situations, where they hunt in the country or in the world, situations that they find themselves in. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on matching that with the hunter.
Mm-hmm.
What we found is, over those years of all those guys going to Africa and shooting all that big stuff, then they'd come back and they're like, yeah, I'm going for brown bear, I'm going for moose, I'm going for elk. What else you got? You know, what else can – I don't want to necessarily be that heavy, but what else
I want to
shoot through?
Can I ask a question on that? So, like, that's the thing that I think about too is just think about the heaviness of that arrow and that, you know, FOC or front of center heaviness. The distance that you get, obviously you're going to start having point dip, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you usually ask a guy when you're going to set him up with an arrow setup, like, what are you comfortable in shooting for your distance?
First question.
It's a great question.
First question. So if a guy comes to me originally.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah, good. So
yeah.
I usually start out with, what's your lethal distance? And that means, what will you shoot at a live animal on your first shot? What's your maximum distance? And then the next question I'll ask him is, what's your practice distance? That's completely different than your hunting distance.
Yeah,
I practice at 80, I shoot to 30.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for most of our customers, especially for whitetails, the average distance is 30 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys won't shoot over 40 yards. So my next thing is, okay, so then let's take your lethal distance, and then I want to build you an arrow that's as heavy as possible, but here's always the key, with as much weight as possible in the front. People always think that I like heavy arrows. I don't. I like really light arrows. And I want to hang up, put a boat anchor on the front of it. Right?
Put, so some that's, put some lead
and,
out there.
And so, and I'll go through this. This kind of goes into rifles too. So, so first question is, what's your lethal distance? What do you practice at? And then I'll say, I would like to make you an arrow that I want you to shoot at that lethal distance, but it has to do two things perfectly for you. Number one, it has to fly perfectly for you out of your bow. And number two, and no one can judge that but you, is you have to like that trajectory at your lethal distance.
Oh, okay.
If you think you're lobbing it too much, then we're going to start backing down the weight. Or if it's not flying perfectly, we'll tune that arrow so it's coming out of your bow perfectly. Mm-hmm. And then what I tell guys is what it's done for me, back to the anxiety part of this, especially for whitetail guys hunting out of tree stands. You know, you see a buck and he walks in your circle, you don't have to wait. I can attack you. You tell me where his lungs are. I can attack you at any angle at any time.
Mm.
So now it opens up my shot, my ethical shot opportunities. I've had, you know, lots of guys over the years that, yeah, I'm back to had lots of guys that, you know, I've been targeting a buck for 2 years, 3 years. In 3 years, I had 17 seconds with him inside bow range and he wasn't broadside, you know, and they're like, I need something because I got to kill this buck.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't wait. Hopefully that one of these days he'll be broadside. So I'm like, well, I can help you with that. You know, I can get you to, so, and for us, our biggest thing is always, I want two holes. I want the arrow to completely pass through if I can.
Penetration first.
That's the right. Most important thing. You make two holes.
You don't have to hit the lungs. If your broadhead is good, like, okay, let's take a front on. You cut 50 inches of material and that broadhead don't feel it. You're killing them. You're
still thinking about that.
What you said, I killed them 7-8 times.
Yeah,
you're cutting so much stuff in there.
You don't even know what you're cutting. You're going through the goodie bag. Right?
I can't get out of my head. You said attack them at any angle.
Mm-hmm. So that goes back to, like, we talked about this actually yesterday. What I learned with hunting these deer on the ground is every animal has a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bear might fight you. Like, what the hell is that? I'm coming at you. A whitetail, which is the space I live in, their defense is flight. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the reaction. That's why I left.
Yeah, sympathetic response.
That's why I shoot the bow the way I do. That's why I switched to a longbow for intense battle situations. Now, this, what Garrett was talking about over here, where I can't, this animal, I need the broadside, right? So setting yourself up to where you can kill it at any angle and be really deadly with your equipment. It gives you a lot of options.
Yeah, so, it does.
For another thing that you touched on, and you said, you know, guys think that they can just go out and fling arrows and kill stuff. That goes against me, my personal ethics. Like, you got to go practice with a bow and be proficient and do all those things. What I'm talking about is now guys making judgment calls in hunting situations where, like, I'm going to break your front shoulders. I'm going to break your leg on purpose.
Mm.
Right. And it's a much different thought process than I'm trying not to creep that shoulder and I hope I don't hit him too far back. Right. You know, that we played. Right.
For sure.
Well, and talking about, so one other, we talk about FOC and heavy arrow weight. So for what, 3 years, I've carried two different weights in my quiver on the ground quite often. And you can watch this in video footage. You're not going out there with your pre-cut lanes. For like a normal tree stand set on private ground, you got your pre-cut lanes, you know your distances, da-da-da-da-da. You're going in, spotting and stalking these animals. Sometimes you got to shoot through grass. Like, right. I don't even see the cavity of the deer right now. I know he's there. He's got my ass pegged. I want a setup that's going to zip right through there. Well, I've learned, like, with what I shoot and what now all my guys are shooting over the last few years, they've all shifted. It's like, I ain't worried about it. If I'm shooting through just solid grass and I can't see the cat, everything we're shooting is going to zip right through there. And the more FOC and the heavier the arrow, and I picked this up on a video that Garrett had of a guy that was shooting a Cape buffalo. This was 7 years ago when I came across the video. And he actually told me about it yesterday. I was like, nobody ever said this, but I caught it in there. This arrow hit a stick that looked like it was as thick as my thumb. And then the arrow never moved, and the stick just got the hell out of the way, and the arrow went 20 more yards and smoked that Cape buffalo. And I was like, wow, that's what I need for some situations on the ground with these whitetails, is I got to be able to punch through shit. Or the stick, I don't see, that right, I didn't see.
There's always one you don't see. That's the problem.
Exactly.
There,
yeah. And my arrow hits that. That's another reason. So I carry two weights in my quiver. I don't need an 860 grain arrow for a whitetail, not with the poundage and everything that I'm shooting. and all the other factors and broadhead design, all that. I carry a 650 and an 860 right now. That's going to be shifting to some other things, but that's what I've ran for 3 years.
Yeah.
My 860, I'm pulling out for inside of 20 because it don't matter, other than if I need to blow through shit
right.
In route.
If there's so something that's another, in the way.
I just wanted to get that out there. It came to me like, you know, we talk about arrow weight, FOC,
I think there's gonna be a
all
part,
this,
two,
just
three,
for
four,
penetration
five,
on the animal, but that's
podcast.
Another.
The other thing that we're really missing here is the importance of the sharpness of your broadhead, too.
Yeah.
Like, that is so crucial in this. You can have as much FOC and weight in front of you, Jared, as you want, but if you have no cutting capabilities, it doesn't matter.
Or it falls apart too quick.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so, you know, you shoot, like, 3-to-1 broadhead or something like that, or whatever, you know, broadheads you shoot, or 1-to-1.5, whatever you're shooting, the cutability of that broadhead and the sharpness and the durability of that metal is what matters the most.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a good broadhead on, it doesn't matter if you shoot the most perfect arrow setup, it ain't going to do shit.
I one of my favorite jokes when we would do SCI and Dallas Safari Club, you'd have guys come in and
drink your drink.
You have guys come in and they'll be like, man, your broadheads are expensive. And I look at them, I'm like, you have $3,000 in Sitka gear on.
That's, yeah,
and I'm like, and
I got the $50 gator, not gator, but yeah, I don't want to spend $30 on a broadhead.
Right. And, yeah. But then I'd look at it and I'm like, if that piece of equipment fails, nothing else matters. Literally,
right. I feel like that's the thing that we're not talking enough about with these arrows. Is everyone's like, wait. And it's now
very small part of it.
It's such a good point. And one, you're at an SCI convention. The dude's probably in a suit.
He just
bought a $300,000 sheet tag.
I'd rather spend more money on the broadhead than the freaking jacket I have on.
Right. Well,
exactly.
That's what's going to be. That's what kills my animals, right? Right.
So your broadheads are designed for big ass animals and just, or this confidence that Jared's talking about.
You know, and he gets thrown around a lot too now. So, you know, very early on in my career in this, when I took over the company from my father, I started reading Ashby. Mm-hmm. And Ashby just made all the sense in the world to me. And I get that some people don't agree with everything that he says, but I literally uprooted my entire life based on those reports. So my previous life, I was the director of marketing at Ducks Unlimited.
No,
so I had a pretty decent job. My wife was an executive at ALSEC St. Jude. So we had a very comfortable lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm going to quit this and I'm going to sell the farm and we are going to make broadheads. Only we don't make broadheads. And I'm going to follow this because I literally took that leap on base what that was and really follow that. So over the years, we've learned ourself and from customer feedback on what works and what doesn't.
Right.
But he had those 12 main points. Number one, structural integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always, guys will talk about 650 and I'm like, 650 is number 12 on the list of 12 things.
Okay.
It only matters if you hit a heavy bone.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about whitetails, even then, with enough FOC and enough, and by the way, I definitely want to touch base on FOC because guys ask a lot of questions and what does it mean and what does it really give you?
Yeah, we'll get into that for sure.
So, but I think for what was I telling you a lie about?
You're talking about the broadheads, the different
12 points.
Yeah,
the 12 points. So 650 really comes into a lower standard. It's all the way down at 12, and it only matters if we hit heavy bone. There's a lot of other things that we need much higher on that list: structural integrity, perfect arrow flight. We don't want to waste any energy while that arrow is going through the air. We want all that energy at impact.
Mm-hmm.
So we start following those rules. So for us, starting out fresh with broadheads and already making tapered arrows, everything was pretty in line, and we were already shooting trad, so heavy didn't scare us. We started really going down that path of trying to build equipment based on his research.
Mm-hmm.
And those slowly got built up over time. In about, 2008, 2009, we were, at that time, the only U.S. distributor for German Kinetic Silver Flames.
Mm-hmm.
Which is how I found his company. Actually, that's the broadhead that I wanted. I couldn't get my hands on it.
Nobody could get them.
And so when I started out with a longbow, that's the head I wanted to get. And I could not get my hands on it. Like, I did a bunch of research
and
online.
You guys are the only ones that had it?
We were the U.S. distributor.
So it was 2 years later, I kept researching. And the broadhead I used, it didn't fail, but that's the one when I switched to a longbow I wanted.
Right.
Yeah. And so then I redid some research, and then you guys picked them up in that time, and that's how I found you guys.
So the big knock on those at the time is nobody could get them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they were amazing. They were an urban myth.
Including me.
They were basically an urban myth. And that's one of the things on the business side that really kind of opened up my eyes. We would get shipments in and, you know, we'd get calls from different individuals and they'd be like, hey, what, you know, you have them in stock. Yeah. What do you got? You know, I'd, and like,
why could no one get them at the time? What was the deal?
So the gentleman that was building them in Germany was a professor at a university and he was building them in his part time.
Oh, just the demand.
And he couldn't keep up with it. And he actually started to hate it. You know, it was just, it took over everything. And he's like, I just want to hunt, you know? And I'm like, I get that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we ended up, what we ended up purchasing from him, and it was a mistake that I made at the time. He offered us German Kinetic Silver Flames. We called them Silver Flames internally. We didn't buy the German Kinetic name. Probably should have. But more importantly, what he gave us at the time was the formula. It's like the formula for Coke on how to take that steel, how to get it that sharp, and how to get it that
powder,
and how to get it. And
right. Yeah, I was just going with it.
And resharpen it and all those kinds of things.
Okay.
And he really had that formula down. And that was the thing that made almost that urban myth when people couldn't get them is everybody always heard about it. These things are unbelievably sharp, out of the pack. And they're so sharp that when you feel them on your, like on your thumb, they feel dull. They feel soft. And it's because they're all buffed. So they're so sharp that they actually feel, you don't feel an edge on them. You don't feel anything.
It's about to cut you open.
They slice you open. So that was the first step. And then we took that at the time and developed a whole series of single bubbles based. Now, once we had the formula for Coca-Cola, once we had the formula on how we were going to build that steel.
Yeah, then you're just going with
then
it.
Then we were just kind of, and we always wanted to make single bubbles anyway. That was
and that's where like the Samurai and Ashby head.
That's where all that, those lines came from for us.
How heavy is a head? Head is that?
So the Ashby is a forged one piece. So it's struck with a hammer. It's 440C. And then we mill and machine it down from that one piece, heat treat it. So it weighs 315 grains.
No fucking
holy shit.
Yeah. That's what I've shot my last two deer with.
350?
15.
15.
Actually, so we'll have a new one. So we redesigned it. This will be the first year after it launched in 2007. Fixed the two or three of the major problems that we saw. You know, I don't know if the consumer, things that we wanted to clear up that we missed on the first time.
Right.
And it'll be 350. Actually, we'll have a 350, a 200, a 150, and a 125.
In that
In that design.
In that design.
So can someone...
And that, which is a separate design from the Silver Flame design.
It's a double bevel.
That's
double size.
Right. For listeners and just for sake of conversation, what's the difference between single and double bevel?
So double and single. So double bevel is what most people are familiar with, right? It's a blade that's sharpened on both sides like a knife, like a normal, like a knife. So that's any double bevel that can be in any format too, right? Two blade, three blade, four blade, double sharpened on both sides. Single bevels always almost come as a two blade, or one blade.
I call it a one blade.
That's what it is. It's one piece of metal.
Two sounded better on the packaging. Yeah. Two is better, right? Yeah. Two is more, right?
Makes sense. It's really one blade. It's one plane going through. It's one plane that the arrow, when it's bending, is fighting with versus three or four, or on a four blade it'd be two, so it's actually less than a three blade.
Right.
You got two planes that the arrow's bending and flexing it against, and then on impact, same thing. A four blade is proven to penetrate slightly better than a three blade. Obviously, physics wise, it's not going to do as well as a one blade because of the planes.
Drag. Exactly. It's drag. And soft tissue. That's one of the things I always clarify. This guy's like, I blow through deer all the time. I'm like, that's soft tissue.
That soft tissue is different.
Every time we're talking about this is not only bone hit, but heavy bone hits. What happens on a heavy? So the big difference between a single bevel and a double is the pressure on that blade at impact. Mm-hmm. So a double bevel is sharpened on both sides. So when that blade enters an animal, it has equal pressure on both sides. It stays relatively straight as it goes through that animal. That channel stays very straight.
Okay.
If you hit a bone, right, you encounter bone and the blade doesn't fail and you have enough weight in the arrow to defeat that bone. So if we hit a bone, right, one's going to win or the other, right? The arrow and broadhead are going to win or the bone's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to defeat that bone at impact, that double bevel, because it's sharpened on both sides, when it hits that bone, it has to cut the bone.
Yeah.
You cut the bone basically in half or nick it or whatever wherever you hit. So you're cutting bone.
Okay.
Single bevels are same shape blades, except they're only sharpened on one side.
Okay.
And then if you flip it over, it's sharpened on that same side. It looks like a sushi knife, like a Japanese sushi knife. It's only sharpened on one side. It's flat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Those on impact, when they hit, as soon as they hit anything and get any resistance, they have to start to twist because it has unequal pressure on that blade.
Mm. So it pops the bone.
So it has to twist as it comes in. So as soon as you make anything, if you make contact with anything hard, it starts to twist very violently. So instead of trying to hit a bone and cut it, with a double bevel, with a single bevel, you hit it and the blade will actually twist and it'll break the bone. You'll snap it. And it takes a lot less energy to snap that bone and keep going than it does to cut the bone and keep going.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I've never had that broken down to me like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, awesome. That was a really good breakdown.
But when he breaks it down, it makes sense.
It does. Yeah. It totally does.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one big advantage. But
it only matters when you're hitting
it
bone.
It only matters when you hit bone. That's the first thing.
Right.
And the second thing is you have to have enough FOC in that arrow to be able to drive ahead to get it to do that.
So what's the
twist? Hold on. I want to do something. Hold on. Hey. What's FOC?
FOC, forward to center. So forward to center, and that's how much weight you have in
your
arrow.
Sorry, boys, I wanted to get that.
Yeah.
That
so FOC is how much weight do you have in the front of your arrow compared to the back of your arrow? How much more?
Why is that good?
Is there a percentage that everybody wants? I hear a percentage.
Good.
So Ashby, through his research, what he found, and this is where guys on the TikTok crew.
Yes.
That they,
we're talking to you.
You're literally talking at your ass, right? So here's the difference. That arrow has to have enough weight in FOC. So in Ashby's research, he found that an arrow of 650 grains with structural integrity in a single bevel broadhead and a minimum of 19% forward to center. So you have 19% more weight in the front of the arrow than you do in the back.
Okay.
Once you do that, he couldn't find a bone on a Cape buffalo or an Asiatic buffalo shooting a 40-pound longbow in testing.
That yeah, I was going to say he's a longbow guy.
He couldn't breed. Well, he did a lot of testing with compound too, but he couldn't on any of those buffalo. And why buffalo were so great to test is their ribs overlap. So you're going to hit a heavy bone going in, no matter what. You can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
So he could hit. He could do. And all he was counting was for bone strikes. And so I think at one point with that 40-pound bow, I think he had 600 or 700 continuous shots, and every single one of them breached. So he was breaking ribs and getting, usually hitting the offside ribs. The reason he had to go down to a 40-pound bow, when he was shooting with a 70-pound compound, the broadheads were sticking out the offside. And so what are we measuring now? He had to leave the broadhead inside the chest cavity to measure the difference. And in order to do that, he had to reduce the weight low enough to be able to see how that worked. Right. So that's the first thing on FOC. The second one is the higher you can get it with trade-off and perfect arrow flight, the more that arrow is going to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
Back to one of the examples I like to give guys on our 650 builds. We like to talk about what we call a slug weight or bullet weight of the arrow. And what that's going to be is we're going to measure the broadhead, the insert, and any brass footing we put behind that.
Behind the insert?
Behind the insert. So the arrows that Victory build us are actually fairly light.
Mm-hmm.
So on those,
I like that though,
mm-hmm. but they're really
you build the weight they want,
they're really stiff. They're really stiff. And they're damn near indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
And so structural integrity for us very high.
Yeah.
So what we were doing is looking at what this slug is and what that means in relation to FOC. So what this slug is?
I like that. That's a t-shirt.
So
what slug are you shooting?
What slug are you shooting? What's your slug weight? Yeah. So hey,
it's
lady.
It's rifle.
Right. So, and just like in rifles, the bigger the slug, the easier it is to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take the same trajectory. Doesn't do all the, but it will increase in penetration.
Oh right? Shit! I'm not going to take my 338 because it's now 4,000 feet per second.
Right. And that's the same kind of thing. Right. You ask a PH in Africa, what's the barrel speed on your 500 nitro? They'll laugh at you. They don't know. They don't care.
They don't give up.
They don't care. They don't care. I know when I pull the trigger, whatever stands in front of me will go down.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I don't care how fast it's going.
Right.
So, in a 650 grain build, so guys say, wow, that sounds really heavy. I'm like, yes and no. In a 650 grain build for us, that's going to be about a 300 grain arrow, depending on length. And that means we're going to add a 350 grain slug in the front. So for most guys hunting whitetails, if you're shooting a 100 grain head with a 12 grain aluminum insert, you're shooting a 112 grain bullet mm-hmm. at whitetails. I'll build you a bullet that's 350 grains. And that's what I try to tell guys. That's what you're shooting at the animal is that slug. The arrow is guidance and steering for that slug.
I love that broke down like that. I've actually never heard that broke down quite like that. But that's
so real quick while we're on FOC. Like, how do you calculate the FOC? Like you were saying, 19%.
Right.
Like, can you break that down quick?
So there's calculators on the internet.
Right.
But so what you do, what you're measuring is the balance point of that arrow. So then you're taking that calculation and you plug it into a formula. I can't, off the top of my head, I don't know exactly what it is. But it's telling you how much more weight you have in the front versus the rest of the arrow shaft. Gotcha. So 19 or higher, again, that was what he found for breaching. And guys are like, well, then you said that you have to be 19. I said, I didn't say anything. I was saying, what we follow, we want them as high as we can get with perfect arrow flight, and you like the trajectory. If it's over 19, most of our arrows for a standard whitetail guy on a 650 build, he's shooting 29-inch arrows. That arrow is going to have somewhere around a 25 to 26% forward to center. So, I mean, comparative to a parallel, right? That's, and here's another part of it. Our apers, our arrows are tapered. So built in automatically, there's more weight in the front than there is in the back.
And it's a stiffer arrow up front then. And that's really important on impact.
Because it's tapered.
Because it's stiffer up front, right. That moves the flex of the arrow closer to the nock. So on impact, it doesn't have as much likelihood of diversion because it's a straighter, the flex don't happen as close to the point.
And all right. That weight.
I mean, that's a micro, that's not like a, all of these things that we're talking about, it's like you put them all together and it's like, for instance, like, you know, like Tanner, he's got a short draw, I need some trajectory. So did I set him up with 650? No, I set him up lighter than that. But I followed everything else. It's like, I'm going to give up a little bit over here so you got some trajectory, but I'm going to follow all this other stuff.
Right.
I'm going to shoot a stiff arrow. I set him up with a 240 cut at 26 inches out of a 70-pound combo. Most people think I'm nuts. Well, guess what? It'll paper tune a bullet hole without fletchings at 3 yards, 5 yards, whatever. Put a 125 grain point weight on. Put a 200 on. They'll bullet holes both times. 315, it'll be a little bit point low, but there's no tail fletchings. You put tail fletchings on it, it's going to be pretty damn near, you know. But now, like, he just shot a white. This is a whitetail. So this is the cool thing is I'm in over in the, here in these little deer land, right?
little deer land.
Garrett's over here dealing with all this big shit.
Moose and grizzlies and all the cool stuff.
You know, I mean, Tanner just shot one at 54 yards, and the deer was igniting. Again, a high reaction deer that you couldn't. He might drop 2 inches. This deer, he was already turning by the time the arrow got him. He hit him low shoulder, dropped him in his tracks right there.
Rolled him.
That arrow only weighed 503, but it was stiff as shit. See, an arrow is a spring. When the bow transfers that energy at release to the arrow becomes a spring. Mm-hmm. So picture if the arrow was a coil spring. It's not a coil spring. All that spring, so the bend of the arrow, the flex of the arrow, is giving up energy that it can't absorb from the bow. It's dissipating it. Then throughout flight, it's flexing more throughout flight. And then on impact, it flexes again to a certain degree. So the stiffer arrow you shoot, the more energy you're absorbing from the bow, and you're also reducing energy loss throughout the flight. And then again on impact, obviously soft tissue, which Garrett brought up, soft tissue, no big deal. Heavy bone, I don't want that arrow to hardly bend at all. I want it to drive. Right, like, take an axe and get it. Just build your own because they don't make one. But build an axe handle that is a little bit wimpy and flexes and see how well you drive through a chunk of wood.
Right.
Yeah. It's a spring. It becomes a spring. So that's my analogy behind that. So, like, okay, let's say you're shooting whitetails and you don't want to hit 650 grains. Well, you hit all these other points, stiff arrow, you know, good broadhead design, all these other things we talked about, taper, stiff arrow up front, things like that. Mm-hmm. You're going to at least, you know, crush 9, 10, 12, 11 things out of 12 or whatever.
Can I ask a question more about the broadheads before we move on?
Yeah. For sure, yeah.
So, like, all right, I think everybody at this table at one point in our life probably shot, like, the four-blade Muzzy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I started on. I pulled the one blade out and made it a one blade.
We were talking about this. I never shot him with bleeders.
I still got them. I got a collection.
So
grew up on them.
So, like, again, back to being conditioned from when we were younger, how many people give you pushback on the fact that you don't have a bleeder on your broadheads?
We get it.
I love it that you don't.
Yeah, I know. He does.
I want to know why.
When I discovered you, that was one thing I loved. You didn't say anything about it. Like, we don't make them, but I was like...
Well, I just asked the question.
But you kind of just explained it, too, with the single bevel, double bevel kind of explanation.
Right. Because it's twisted.
You're talking more bone, right? So, like, penetration. So, penetration, bone, right? Yeah. And if we're hitting soft tissue, okay, so this is just my brain working, all right?
We're just not talking about soft tissue for the rest of the podcast, because it's easy to get through soft
tissue. Forget about soft tissue.
But my thought is, all right, so not every time we're going to hit boned. Sometimes we are going to put that perfect shot on, right?
Yeah. For sure.
And it's still going to perform excellent.
So cool. But here's my question.
They were great.
Though. Here's my question. Yeah, exactly. I believe it. I shoot them. But
we're all passionate. I love it.
I'm not worried about that. But in my mind and in my old Muzzy four-blade blind, if I have this much cut versus this much cut, I'm going to have a larger blood trail. Yeah.
More blood.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you the question.
Jared, so, shut up.
Sorry.
PR guy is talking.
I already know the answer to this, but I know this is something that I've had people ask me about their product.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how to really explain it properly because Ashby's kind of like anti-bleeder.
Really hard to quantify.
Very anti-bleeder.
That one.
Yeah. Very anti-bleeder.
I am too. And I have never. I told you earlier this year.
But why?
I actually never read that.
I want to know why. I understand.
Penetration.
We're anti-bleeder because the fucking penetration, everybody.
I didn't mean to get everybody all fired up, but I did.
No, I love it. I'm glad you brought that up. So, yeah, it's really hard to quantify that, but I can tell you this. The best blood trails I've ever seen are on a one-blade head, and I've seen... I've seen rage hits. I've seen everything.
What is the physics behind that, though?
I shouldn't say I've seen everything. That's not true. I've seen a lot of things. Okay.
Just ask.
I've seen great blood trails on some of those other head designs and whatnot, too. I've also seen weak blood trails with a one-blade head. I've seen weak blood trails with all heads.
Yep.
I've seen them both. I can say 100% the best blood trails I have seen have been a one blood, but it's not every time, just like any head.
Is it because of your penetration, or is it not necessarily your cut, it's your penetration?
That's the part I want to know.
That's how
I'm... It's like, I can only tell you from my experience.
This is us arguing on a normal basis.
That's why I'm like, just
this is
90%
of our conversations, is us yelling at each other.
Every trainer with white children.
I mean, I know it's in the video from 9 years ago. Even Shay back then, he's like, I've never seen a blood trail that big. And I was like, yeah, I haven't either. It was a one blade head.
It depends on what you hit. It really depends on what you hit.
Anything can make a lot of blood or no blood.
Situational, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As far as if I'm going to go bigger, it's going to be in the same direction, my personal self.
Yeah.
I'm going to push that in the same direction. I kind of came up with this analogy more recently. Like, if you got an axe, and I hate it because it's wood, it's not bone, but just physics wise, if I got an axe head and it's, say, 3 inches across, and I want to make one more inch of cut, if I expand that to 4 inches, it's still going to drive through it pretty easily. If I create a wedge and put it the other direction, a half inch on each side, it's going to create a wedge. It's because it's now got to completely split that bone in multiple different directions.
But it's spreading out its energy.
Yes. All the guys now over the last scientists. Few years have switched over, like for whitetails, they've all switched over to 1.5-inch cut, one-blade head, because I can't find anything better.
Yeah.
And it works. I've seen all kinds of hits that I'm like, shit, I've seen those hits before, and we didn't recover that ear, and that thing piled right.
And to be fair, I've been shooting Garrett's arrows before I even knew you.
Before you knew me.
Yeah, like...
So you guys all got me brewing, because... I don't know, Eric,
I'm thinking...
Your brain's got to be brewing, too, cause mostly...
You're like the most...
The giraffe.
Yeah.
You're an engineer.
But we've been shooting Victor arrows for a long time.
Machinist. Pretty close.
Well, we shoot... You're shooting VAP SSs this year?
Yep.
I'm shooting RIP TKOs. I shoot a 75-grain outser, and then 125-grain head.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect for whitetail.
So I'm at 485 grains.
With 200 up front, your slug's 200.
But your slug, exactly.
Yeah. Your slug's 200. Yeah.
So, do I need to go more?
Oh, geez, loaded question.
I know, that is...
Well, because everyone
your range? How far do you want to shoot?
Everyone listening right now is doing exactly what I just did while they're listening.
Okay,
do I need to go more?
You just picked up the phone, you're calling Garrett.
I just listened to the Working Class Bowhunter podcast. Garrett, do I need to go more?
No.
Okay, why not?
Are we talking about whitetail, or what kind of animal are we talking about?
Well, let's do this hypothetical phone call. I feel like I need to go more after hearing your conversation.
Then I would tell them to go more, but that's where I don't ever try to push anybody into how you're going to do that or why you're going to do that. How we sell all this stuff is question-based. I just ask you a bunch of questions, and then I kind of fill in the blanks from there. How do you hunt?
What do you hunt?
We've been doing it for a while, and so, you know, we've got that formula down, right? And usually we can walk guys down a path and explain to them, this is, you know, what do you want to – and normally it'll come,
man, I am the king of like the high school breakup. Yeah. I get the call, you know, I lost a 180 and I can't sleep. And, you know, and I'm like, it sounds like a high school breakup. You know, they're miserable.
I never thought about that.
And so I'm like, and usually
they come to you for a reason.
RIP, dog.
They usually come to us in the whitetail world, at least before. In the last 2 years, it's changed a little differently. Yeah. But before, they came to us out of pain. It was straight out of pain. I did this. I lost this.
A realization of change.
I don't know if you're the answer, but I need to do something different because what I just did broke my heart.
You're the rebound.
I'm the rebound girl. You're the rebound. Rosie like rebound. Shit. That's me. Yeah, that really kind of kicked in for guys, depending on back to the situation. So what's enough? I'm like, what we do know is 650. If breaching any bone at any angle is important to you, if you hit that number, it will do that for you every single time. If that isn't important to you, then
with all the other factors,
we can build them out.
Single bevel, and some, FOC,
you'll get a guy, you know, I'm shooting pronghorns at 80 yards. Well, no, okay, we're going to flatten that out more. We're going to do that. But one of the interesting things that we found also with Aeroflight, not only are the arrows heavier, they have high FOC, they're tapered. Most guys, if they're shooting a 400 to 450 grain arrow and they're shooting fixed sights, 20, 30, 40, 50. I'll hand them test kits, right, of arrows. They'll go out and shoot them. And the two questions or the two responses we get back almost inevitably from guys are, number one, almost inevitably out of the gate, I can't believe how quiet my bow is.
Yes, because it's absorbing more energy.
That's the first thing my dad said when he started shooting.
Yeah, exactly, because the bow is absorbing more energy. Any noise that the bow makes...
Wasted energy.
It's wasted energy.
Sound is considered energy. So like, sound is made from energy.
So like when Tanner, like I did.
Science.
Okay, so I get crazy here.
Like, Google it. You know,
like, so like, it's just so simple. It's shit you don't think about though.
Yeah, right.
You know
what
I mean?
Right. Right.
Well, like I this think here, when we, that's energy.
When Brandon and I reconnected a few years ago, I believe I told
Craigslist.
Him that. Yeah, he worked at a couple of archery shops before that. That's how I met him years ago.
That's actually just a pretty good story. No, a lot of people don't know how we met.
But anyways, we got talking archery when we reconnected 10 years later. And that's what I told him a few years ago. I was like, any noise the bow makes, it's energy lost that could have been transferred to the bow. So like with Tanner's bow, right? So I thought it would actually not have as good a trajectory with how I set him up as it did. But there's a line there. And so out to 80 yards, it was, you know, it's moderately heavy. He's coming in at pretty light, 26-inch arrow, 240 spine, you know, 503 grains. But that was heavier than what he had been shooting prior. Didn't the gap didn't change. Why? Because he was shooting a weaker spined arrow before, and it was dissipating that energy.
Okay.
It's a cooked noodle versus a not cooked noodle.
It's a wet noodle versus, exactly.
Yeah.
So I love that because I just told Jess, I saw her
like
her arrow set up the other day, and I said, your arrow is like a wet noodle.
Yeah.
I literally said wet noodle. It's like a wet noodle.
Versus it hits, a solid noodle.
It's going to flex. It's a spring.
Yep.
Can you be overspined?
Sure.
Well, what does being overspined do? So we got to separate.
Because we know underspined, it's like the wet noodle.
You got to separate trad from compound because you can get away. You can manipulate shit a lot more with a center shot compound than you can with traditional gear.
Yeah.
So you can push things further in the overspined category with a compound versus.
And the taper. The taper affects things differently. So
I think it flies. So I think you can manipulate it even more with that.
Yes and no.
Okay. Well,
that's a great.
Not for him, for me. Absolutely.
Well, this is what guys ask me that.
Get familiar.
Like, where do you do? Where do you? And I'm like,
does your mind slow down yet, Eric?
No.
I'm enjoying this.
I'm still thinking about shit from 10 minutes ago.
This is chaotically necessary, though. Like this, anytime you get anyone from Whitetail Adrenaline on a podcast, it's chaotically fun, and this is chaotically necessary. Necessarily fun.
This is so and disorganized.
I love it. I love it. This is the best. This is why every time anyone from Whitetail Adrenaline, Jared or the crew, now PR Paletta, people love you guys on because it's fucking fun. And that's just the bottom line.
We like having fun. Let me get another beer.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. This is why we drive down here.
Fun juice. Go get some fun juice.
Hey, give me a fun juice can.
We call it aiming fluid.
Can we not point out the fact that Jared gets beers for everybody?
It's kind of a great.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a great thing.
Let's mark that.
I don't even remember my question. Overspine.
Overspine.
Overspine, you're going to get reverse of weak spine. What, duh. But what it's going to do is...
Thanks, Garrett.
I know. It's a genius. Weak spine...
It's physics, right?
Weak spine usually... The word or the phrase that I like to give guys if they don't know... They're like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, is your arrow when you shoot it, is it consistently inconsistent? Does it go left? Does it go right? Does it go up? Does it go down? That's always spine. Always, always, always. The other thing that we found
in traditional or is in compound?
Anything.
Because doesn't the tuning your bow play a huge factor in that as well though?
It does. It can for sure. We try to
We shoot fletchings to fix the lack of tune.
Right. Back to your thing on we don't talk about soft tissue. We don't ever talk about bow tuning. We just assume by the time you get to me, you know how to tune your bow. I don't know what bow it is. I don't know what
you're down the line. You're worried about their one problem.
Yeah, right. I'm like, you're got to know how to do that yourself or take it somewhere to have somebody do it for you. But by the time
So you're expecting your customers to come with a tuned bow ready to go.
And it's happened.
And then you can build that.
It's happened.
Because how many times have you got customers be like, they still fly like shit. You're probably assuming that it's either their how they shoot or their tuned bow.
No, or we'll walk them through it. And you're like, your arrows fly like shit. And you're like, okay, what's going on? You're walking through it.
There's a diagnosis.
A lot of times, it's like a doctor. I don't know what it is. I'm just going to start knocking things that I know it's not. Right. So I'll go through. A lot of times.
Process of elimination.
Right. A lot of times they're either underspined or overspined. Almost always they're underspined or overspined. It's one of those two things. Anytime it's arrow flight, it's almost always spine. So that's where you're just not matched up with draw length, with arrow, with head weight, you know, all the factors that come in to get that thing to fly. Mm-hmm. You're out of whack somewhere, but I'll have guys come in and they're like, yeah, these fly like shit. And you'll call in and like, when's the last time you had your bow tuned? Like,
1974.
Yeah. My buddy did it last week.
Yeah. They'll call you back 3 days later and they're like, oh yeah, these are missiles. Yeah. You're not, and like, it's not the, you know, if you match with an end for us, those tapered arrows with all that weight in the front, it's extremely forgiving. Mm-hmm. So it's not,
it moves the flex point further away from the point.
Jared learned all about node points the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. That was new information to me.
Node points.
In he taught me some.
Yep.
Yes, yes, and that's very interesting knowledge. Like, obviously,
you doing okay?
I'm not.
Little smoke came out of one ear.
He filled me in on something that maybe would have taken me a decade to figure out, or maybe I never would have. But he kind of pointed out some different things. So, like, I study a lot of ancient literature, and I will say they had. There's over 100 different types of arrows, depending on the situations and different things that I've found. 100 different between arrow combinations, broadhead designs, combinations, certain things. Almost all the subcultures I've come across did shoot a tapered shaft for their ultra penetrating arrow. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to battle. I need to get through a shield. So we're not in war times now. We're the archery is the premier weapon.
We're straight and shoot scapels.
So there's three types.
It's a shield.
Scapels are shield.
There's three types of arrows that even way back, we're talking 13th, 14th century stuff. You got your straight parallel, which is what most people are used to.
It's a regular straight shaft.
And then you've got a tapered shaft, tapered more towards the point. And then you got what's called like a barrel shaped, which is it's fattest in the middle of the shaft, tapered down at the ends. And then there's another type of taper.
The old ACCs.
Exactly.
Is a barrel.
But the best penetrating arrows that they described, I'm just going off of what these ancients described, was always their heaviest arrow. That was what they took to war or for big game. And it was always their heaviest arrow. And like, say, if you study the Manchurian, now they redesigned the entire bow to shoot specifically decently heavy poundage, like minimum 70, 80 pounds, all the way up to 240 is the highest guy that I've found that could shoot.
Are you reading this? Is like books you're finding?
Yeah, this is ancient literature stuff. But their arrows were 1,200 to 1,800 grains. And they designed that bow. So that is the most efficient bow to shoot a heavy arrow that, as far as in the traditional world, would be a Manchurian bow. But you have to hit a certain draw weight, which is 70, 80 pounds. And you have to be shooting an arrow so heavy. Under that, it's not very efficient. It's not as good as like the Turkish or Ottoman style bows or the Saracens or the Arabs. All I'm saying is they knew that knowledge way back then. It doesn't matter what subculture of ancient literature I study. When they were going to battle and needed their most penetrating arrow setup, it was always their heaviest one. Whatever. You know, this
their heaviest arrow might have been 600 grains for their bow design in this culture, but that was the one that they selected for penetration.
Mm-hmm.
It was always their heaviest one. It's anyone that I study.
I find it, that's very interesting information, and I find it just as interesting that you have dove that deep into it.
Oh yeah. This has been something we've been talking about. I'm surprised you actually brought it up.
Yeah, I keep a lot of this.
I'm learning a lot of stuff. He told me a lot about it at one trade show, and God damn, you're deep in this shit.
If you ever want to, like...
Smoke's coming again.
I'm like, holy shit.
If you ever want to set aside 6 hours of your life to, like, have your mind blown, have Jared start talking about the ancients and the way they shoot.
Maybe we just need to have you come in here and just... We'll turn the record button on and we'll just go sit at the bar.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be any fun.
You're talking about himself.
Well, it wouldn't be any fun for you. It might be fun for us.
Listening back, it's like, damn.
Trust me, the more I read this stuff, the more it's like... I feel like I'm a beginner still. So, that's the cool thing about it. Like, I've advanced a lot, but there's still a lot of things. And that's a big reason why I'm so quiet on a lot of it.
You're just more ambitious now for it than you've ever been.
Is this true? Yeah. Is this not? Oh, yeah. Is this true or is it not?
And that's a cool thing that you've been working on, Chef, is that the fact that you've been diving into the science behind of it, and also, literally, you have the tape that shows it works. Like, you can prove that your thoughts and your methods actually are successful
some of the time,
because here's the thing: a lot of our stuff is anecdotal, isn't it?
Yeah,
like you go and shoot a deer.
It's just a theory.
You shoot an animal and be like, "Oh, this worked great," and I'm like, "Cool," and I'm taking his word for what he said because it's anecdotal.
Right.
Where Jared's like, "I've been doing this.
I got to take here, this let me all show in you for episode, a long time. See a lot
season
of things.
10, episode 3, minute 45. This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a solidification.
And let me show it to you again here. And let me show it to you again
and
here.
Then he shows it. One of the coolest things that you've done is actually broken down with me. Remember when we were at your house and we were souped up on bourbon and you're showing me how much.
Maybe I don't remember.
Yeah.
Tell me now. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about yet. That'll come back to you.
You're a genius.
It's on Cuff this year. Right. And we kept watching Funky's Velvet Buck.
Oh, yeah.
And the amount of drop that buck had. And
it was one of the, to see.
That was one of the coolest breakdowns that I've ever had. And there wants to be something that we should do at some point. Is
what is up, guys? Switching it up on this podcast and the next 2 to 3, I guess, on how we're doing the ads. Only just because it's hunting season, we know you want to get right to the goods. But, everything free has a commercial. And we've been busting tail. So, the podcast is brought to you by Elite Archery. Have you guys seen the new Omnia? Pretty cool. We're in the launch release video for that, talking about it on the podcast. If you have not seen that, get to EliteArchery.com. Check out the new Omnia. It's a fast one for guys who are into that. It's 32 axle to axle, 6-inch brace height, 347 IBO. Lots of great colors, a lot of new features this year. So get on there, pick your color, and use code WCB. You can send that to a local dealer and get rocking. So if you're thinking about a new bow, that's one to look at. Have that in the rotation. So check it out, EliteArchery.com, code WCB, everything outdoor group. Also, Big Time. Man, I killed a buck the other day, and he had a belly full of Big Time clover. I hunted just off of my food plot, a little different tactic, and got it to work. So, think about frost seeding, what your plans are for the spring or next fall, or just never hurts to already be a step ahead of that. So use code WCB2022. I imagine once it's 2023, if you're listening to this way delayed, it would be WCB2023 then. So get yourself into some Big Time, save some money, enjoy what they have to offer. Great people. They're making feeding deer cool again. If that makes sense. Also, Huntworth, huntworthgear.com. I'm super pumped about our partnership with Huntworth, and even more pumped about the new Heat Boost line from Huntworth. Get on there. It's right on the top banner. You click on it. They have all the Heat Boost stuff in one category, so you can shop around. They're great fitting, warm clothing. I did some testing on it on my mountain lion hunt. Love it. Looking forward to rocking it again this fall. I really like the Saskatoon Heat Boost heavyweight pants. They're my jam. I just love the fit of it. I even love the fit of, like, I have the Tarnan midweight pants. Love them. They just fit good. They fit nice. And they fit good too if you're riding an e-bike, if you do that type of thing. But check out Huntworth. Save some money on your next Heat Boost purchase. Code WCB15. So check it out there. The podcast also brought to you by Scent Crusher. I'm actually getting ready to set up a Halo Series Locker Lite
here in the studio. I'm going to put it by the back door. We're going to have some people in and out that are hunting public in the area or have property with an hour, a couple hours of the studio. And for our friends, we just say, hey, let's have hunting camp. And so they'll be able to utilize that Halo series. We actually don't have a shower at the studio, so that's going to keep their clothes from getting too rank. They're just going to have to do, you know, the old-fashioned horse bath with baby wipes or whatever. But at least their clothes will be fresh. And that's, you know, one of the big things. So check out Scent Crusher. And check, you know, if you don't have room for a full-size closet, maybe that's the move for you. It's got the Halo series unit in it and all that. So check it out. I like it. I have the big one at home. And this little one's going to be perfect for the studio without taking up too much space. Podcast also brought to you by Old Barn Taxidermy. I have my buck there doing a nice Euro mount, saving the cape for one of the Garbuck replicas. My mule deer is looking good. We had to put artificial velvet on it, and Sam absolutely killed it. So when I shot my buck, he fell down the mountain and messed up his velvet. And he's like, "Yo, you decide what you want to do." You know, when I shot him, he was full velvet. I want him mounted that way. And I got some sneak peek pictures, and I'm pretty pumped. I should have it. By the time this podcast launches, he should be in the studio. But he's looking real good. I'm super stoked about it. So check out Old Barn Taxidermy. They are some of the best in the biz. They're great, great people. They give you back a great product, and they're excited to work with you. You don't feel like you're inconveniencing them. And also, if you're near Fort Madison, Iowa, you can go there, and it's a one-stop shop. They do processing. They do their tannery there, everything. And they have the new G2 forms. They're looking killer, and they are running like a fine-oiled machine there at Old Barn. It's pretty impressive when you go in. You see just the amount of mounts they crank out at a super high quality, and they're just such good people. You just got to love them. Podcast also brought to you by Loophole Optics, the new rangefinder, the RX Full Draw. Check that out. We're rocking 10x42s. I'm still rocking 12x50s. I'm a big fan of having good optics for whitetail hunting. As Michael said when he was in here on the podcast, it prevents FOMO. You don't have to be like, I'm missing out on the fun over there. You can look up and see what's going on. You can see a buck coming from a distance and decide if he's a shooter before he gets in your wheelhouse, and you might make a mistake like Doug did. So check out Loophole. Love them. Everything they do is just top of the line. Also, Trophy Line. I killed my first buck out of a Trophy Line saddle. Not my first buck, my first saddle buck. And I killed out the new Vanatic. And man, I just love it. It was a good time. It was the first animal I've shot out of it. Drawing back was a breeze. It cleared up a lot of questions or doubts I may have had about saddle hunting, and I'm looking forward to making it more and more as I use it more and get more comfortable with it and have ideas on how I want it set up and where I'm looking to shoot and all that. I have a feeling I'll be using it. I don't know if it'll be 50-50 to a Novix hunt, you know, a hang on, you know, your standard hang on tree stands, but I think within time I could be like a 50-50 hunter when it comes to that. So we'll see, but I'm excited. It does get me excited for that new things, but check out trophyline.com and use code WCB to save some coin there. But they have carabiners, all sorts of just different lineman's ropes and everything you need on Trophy Line. Their packs, the K's pack is what I've been running. Your platform can fit into it. Your sticks can fit into it. Everything. It's just designed for the mobile hunting. No matter what saddle platform or sticks or whatever you use, it'll work. So check that out on Trophy Line. More than a saddle company, really is. Code WCB, save yourself some money there. And Spy Point Trail Cams, the Flex is available now. And I have 4 Flexes running right now, scattered across several different properties. But I'm loving them. Picture quality is great. Easy to set up, over-the-air firmware updates. I'm in the Insiders Club, so that app's great. You can favorite photos and request HD and filter it and keep everything organized. And right now, they are $109.99 on spypoint.com. So get on there, check that out. And CamoFire, CamoFire.com, revolving deals. I just got on here right now. They have all sorts of hunting clothing and camo, and these deals expire in 9.5 hours, and then it'll recycle, and there'll be new deals. They have game packs in here, all sorts of goodies, some merino. They have, I mean, they have all sorts of crazy stuff, even like HD pepper spray non-lethal self. That looks sweet, actually. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. I get caught up into looking and buy it. Belts, scopes, water bladders, beanies, towels, rifle cases, you name it. It's on there. Tents. Here's optics. There's tripods. There's sleeping pads. All this is on there right now. Multi-tools, knives, all that. And it just the deals recycle. So get on there. Like I always say, if you got a hunt coming up that you know you're going to have to get gear for in advance, like if you go and you're going to go mule deer hunting or elk hunting next fall, you get on Camo Fire and just stay on the ball on it. And then you just stay on it and then maybe save yourself some money. That might add up over time. So also, Novix Tree Stands. I'm trying to get through these guys for you. Novix Tree Stands. Check them out at novixoutdoors.com, whether you're going to rock the Echo or the Hilo. I like them both. I hunt out of both. I killed my doe the other week out of a Echo, a little bigger platform, comfy, but the Hilo is too for its size. They're both very portable, very mobile, and I run the stick quiver with the regular sticks. I always call them the regular sticks, but it's basically the Hunt Ready system. If you get on and look at the Hunt Ready system, they have one in an Echo and a Hilo. It's just ready to rock, and that's what I run for my stands. They're easy to set up, and I think people overthink it too. It's like it's one strap per stick. And that's all it is. That's not hard. That's not, it doesn't have to be overcomplicated when you're doing a hang and bang or a run and gun or whatever your term is. But yeah, check them out. Novix. I think the code is used up. But if it's not, WCB22, try that out. There's 200 or 250 uses on it. And I think it's about full. So check that out. Get on Novix. Also, Thermoseat. If your Novix seat craps out and you need a replacement, or you just want something thicker or warmer, Thermoseat's got them. Code WCTS. Victory Arrows. Been shooting those. The Rip TKOs. 480 grains is my setup right now, paired with the Slick Trick Broadhead. And then new to the family of WCB is Dialed Archery. So dialedarchery.com. It's, in my opinion, the future of what archery sites are going to be for hunting. And whatever you really want to set them up, but we're rocking the Arxo sight in a dovetail version. And you can pick your colors, the body of the color, the dial of the color. You can rock inside sight tape or outside sight tape. There's double pin. You can choose your pin size. It's pretty much completely customizable. They're, you know, based right here, American made, good people. There's all sorts of goodies. Get on. I'm reading it as I'm talking about it, and there's so much you can do to customize your site, and their merch is awesome. So check them out, dialedarchery.com. I'm hoping to have a promo code soon for you guys, and we have some stuff coming down the line that we're excited about them. I love them. They're probably the best-looking bow sight hands down ever made. I'm rocking green. I like it. Doug's got purple for the purple rain. But anyway, I rambled for long enough. Thank you guys for supporting us and letting us do this. And best of luck to you. The hunting is getting good. And that's why you might hear this intro or these ad read on a couple episodes, because right now is when it matters. And every second we cannot be together due to the podcast. We're hunting or we're working. If we're not doing those, we're with the fam. You know how it is. So best of luck to you guys. Tag us in your photos. If you got working class bow hunter gear, send those our way. We need to do a better job at saving all that and doing something cool with them. But either way, thanks, guys, for the support. I'm done rambling. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Seeing how much
the arrow in flight and watching how much that deer's
going to be. And you see one, there's $3. The situation, there's $3, and I don't want to give up too much of it because, you know, Uncuffed's release here in a couple weeks.
PR guy. Plug it.
Watch it. It's coming. 2 weeks? No, but it's coming, folks.
Just like anyway. I say, if I have a couple beers, no one really knows how many I had. So,
I like that.
All right, Keith, carry on.
So there's these $3 here, and you actually see one of the bucks watch the arrow go in front of his face.
You watch his eyeballs move with the arrow.
Yeah, it's like a 2-year-old watches
his arrow. What the hell is that?
And you see him start to move. And then the other buck actually has a silhouette of his horns on the bread basket. On the bread basket. And you see the big boy, the Velvet, that was 170 or whatever it was.
No big deal.
High neck shot.
The movement of that movement of that deer that was the least alert, probably, but he's an older buck.
He wasn't even looking.
Yeah, he wasn't even looking. That he had was unreal. And watching that frame by frame, I mean, I bet he dropped 14, 16 inches.
He dropped a bunch. And also, the further that range gets, now their body starts to twist and turn. And,
right.
And that's why the funk hit it right here.
So the light bulb moment for me was there's a lot of reaction, and unfortunately, a lot of people don't film their stuff, and they never know what happened at their shot when they lose an animal.
Mm-hmm.
They never, you know, like that one that I shot at 26 yards that got 10 inches of drop from the arrow going 15 yards to 26. Like, it didn't move. It didn't flinch.
Well, Chef, how many times have the guy said you,
know,
you
I when I saw footage, that,
have you look at the animal
before
after
I looked
it?
At the footage, in my mind, I was like, he got some drop, but I thought I saw 3 to 4 inches of drop. Turned out to be more like 10.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Well, and I was like, whoa. But if I had never had the footage, I'd be like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
I thought I saw my arrow hit him.
And 98% of people listening have been in that situation.
Exactly.
Dude, I'd film more of my stuff. It's just such a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just is. Bottom line, that's why no one does. If it was easy, everyone would have Whitetail Adrenaline DVDs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They'd probably go to streaming right away, but.
Should we leave the room? You guys need to talk this out?
Yeah. All right, that's a separate. Let's not go down this. Is that, yeah.
Bottom line, yeah. This is all a really fascinating conversation, and it's conversation that I think just we could do a 6-hour-long podcast and still just keep going through, but. You know, the knowledge that sits on this side of the table between you two on archery in general and penetration and arrows and broadheads and all that stuff is an honor to have you
more than this side.
Yeah. it is. And that's why I'm leaning more this side, but it's, thank you guys both for like coming in and just kind of like spilling some of this
sure.
and bullshitting and chatting. And it's great to see two smart dudes in the game of hunting and archery kick back and drink beer and cuss and kick it with
Well,
glass.
It's fun for us because a lot of the stuff that he's reading, not anywhere near all of it, but I've read a lot of that stuff too.
Oh, I bet.
And
yeah.
So we kind of, hey, have you read this? Have you looked at this?
You guys nerd out together.
We do. Yeah. It's embarrassing, you know. We're talking about Turkish archery and talking about
that's funny,
Battle of Angkor in 1450.
And the cool thing is, like, anybody could call Grizzly Stick tomorrow and they'd be able to talk to Gary.
They call you when they call they're talking to you.
There's three of us on the phone, but there's a one in three chance. I pick up the phone every day.
And that's the crazy thing is how many times you call a pretty major manufacturer and like, hey, I can talk to the guy. I can talk to one of the main people.
It's very cool.
You know, and
I love it too that it just so relates into what we've already been doing anyway. Like not necessarily like the super extreme weights
but a lot of the other things.
But extreme is not really the proper word because sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So sometimes it's the weight.
Yeah.
But to a lot of people, it's new. And I think that's where like the fascination is like heavy arrows, heavy broadheads, FOC, all this stuff. And you get some of the crazy characters on the internet that are like, they kind of rub people both ways, you know? And there's so many different things. Like we've had, I don't know, half a dozen heavy arrow guys be requested to do the show. And I think this is the first one we've done more focusing on it. And I'm glad it panned out the way it did. And so thank you for that. But some of them guys that are out there, there's several. It's just kind of like, I don't know about that. I don't have an opinion either way. I'll just stay away from it.
I want to find the guy that can answer why.
Well, here's one thing. So I realized this when I started studying more of the ancients. Archery had a transition period. There's about a 400-year gap once firearms came on board where a lot of information was lost. And back then, they kept a lot of stuff very secret. So there's not a ton of ancient literatures.
So dudes in there trying to kill the enemy. Right? Or they're like, we got this heavy arrow they figured out. Don't let them go.
Exactly.
National security.
Will and Maurice Thompson. So like Will and Maurice Thompson here in the U.S., they're what started the National Archery Association here in the U.S. And that was like right after the Civil War period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then Saxon Pope and Art Young kind of picked it up from there in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
But if you study all of this going all the way back to the ancient times, centuries ago, you watch this progression of archery where it went from, I need this, so I need a certain level of accuracy. I need a certain level of penetration, infliction of damage. I need a certain amount of versatility, what I'm doing with my body, like whatever position I'm in, a certain level of speed of executing the shot. And the last one, which I don't really factor because I'm all trying to get tight range. Range would be the fifth.
So that's those the are five like the pillars he talked about earlier. Yeah,
those are the five pillars. Now, I'm just trying to get close on these deer, so range isn't something that I focus much on.
all these other ones. But if you watch and study how archery shifted, now it went to like Olympic style back 100 years ago, one or not quite that far, but you've seen this transition where archery was got so focused on accuracy to win the Olympic seat and give our country, you know, this status boost, and everything got focused on accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And these other pillars got either forgotten about, or most likely a lot of this ancient script manuscripts and stuff didn't even come into English print until the mid to late 1900s. So some are like 1950. They were all other languages. They weren't even in English print. Right. So Saxon Pope, Art Young, Howard Hill, Will Compton, all those guys, they didn't even have access to it unless they could read that
translate
literature.
It or whatever, yeah.
Exactly, which they didn't. So a lot of that, but when I read through, and it's really easy to see how things shifted and so much focus got put on just solely accuracy alone, where back in the old days, you got to remember this, like when I was studying the Manchurians more.
Where's the Manchurians from?
So that would be like northern China region.
Okay. Mongolia,
and they
China.
Believe that bow got developed by the Jurchen tribes. So they hunted a lot of big game too, like the Siberian tiger, the largest tiger in the world. And, you know, obviously there's moose in Russia. That's getting pretty close up in those parts. They didn't have an elephant gun or a .338 backing them up.
Mm-hmm.
So that they were hunting stuff that was super dangerous that could kill them. They needed that arrow to perform. That's why they, in my opinion, from what I've studied and gathered, that's why they came to what they did with everything. Broadhead design, arrow design, arrow weight, FOC. Their arrow weight, their broadhead, your slug, 500 grains.
Easy, yeah.
500 grains is out of all the ancient ones that they have in
museums. What were they making
museums.
Them out of in, back at stone?
The actual heads, yeah. they had steel. They had steel. So the Manchurians, that came up, it's not quite as ancient. See, that came in more around, I shouldn't say, because I can't remember if it was 17th century.
Okay.
When they evolved. They're the last tribe besides...
Just
like
before
the,
or after ancient aliens.
The Comanches, they say the six-shot pistol got developed because the Comanches here in America could shoot bow fast. I haven't studied them much yet.
See, I started reading the history of the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm sure you guys have read that. I have not finished it because I hate reading because I just fall asleep, but I tried really hard.
Seems like you're really into it.
No, I'm just kidding. Because I used to be like super involved, and I still am a measure for Pope and Young, but I was like real heavy. When I was young, like 19, I was deep in the Pope and Young game, and Ishii, the Indian.
Ishii, yeah.
They Saxon said he like, really I, wasn't that great of a shot.
Yeah. Except for on wild game. Yeah. Saxon Pope and Art Young would beat him on the range, but in Saxon Pope wrote it in his book. In hunting, Ishii beat him.
Yeah.
Right. Beat him always. He shot more instinctually based, but he couldn't beat him on the range.
I gotcha. Okay.
There's some things, and that's another part of archery that's very hard to quantify. Mm. And that, I believe, comes back to like the instinctual. You know, like I used to shoot
it's
the
like
controlled
rock.
I used to shoot the controlled process way, and I did that for 9 years and loved it for the strengths that it has. But you're going against animals, which are going to react one of two ways: fight or flight. Their whitetail's going to get the hell out of there. Another type of animal, a Siberian tiger, might come at you. But either way, your autopilot system is naturally wired. So if you train it properly, it's going to handle that situation better if you train it properly.
I got you.
And some will say, well, it's only designed to do one thing efficiently. That's not true. That's its main focal purpose, but how well you train it, it can be extremely accurate as well.
Mm-hmm.
And now you go to a fight or flight response situation that's high intensity, your body's going to autopilot very quickly, handle that situation the way it's been trained. Take military. You got a sniper for a reason. They do it a certain way. But you send your close quarter guys in there to combat, they're going to be highly trained and running on autopilot.
Yeah.
Because fight or flight response, it can handle that situation and make the right decision, judgment call in a fraction of the time.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Does that kind of make sense?
No, it does. It does.
It's no different than when you probably used to fight. Like, you get punched in the face. Do you bail or go after him?
Yeah, you're countering.
Yeah. You know, so it's just how you're wired and you can train your body to do that.
Right. Interesting stuff, man. Archery is a very multi-layered, fascinating sport, and that's why we're all here.
A rabbit hole.
Right.
And there's no...
It's a rabbit hole. That's absolutely right.
I look at it, there's no wrong or right way, right? There's, you know, guys are like, this is the way.
The best way is the one that works.
Just as long as it's ethical. I'll tell you what. I don't care if it's ethical.
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't like ways because they're limits. Ways are always limits. The methodologies are always limits. And sometimes, like in hunting, like hunting deer on the ground, I got to break rules sometimes. Limits. Things that I'm like, okay, in this situation, I got to break that. So that goes back to, I mean, even if you study like Bruce Lee martial arts, he did the same thing. Yeah. He didn't like creating limits for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So you can apply that same thing to... That's one of my things with science. I love science, but what always proves science wrong? More science. And it might not prove it wrong in certain cases. It might prove that there's another way.
Right.
You know, so I love stats and I love science, but sometimes certain people will put, will use science as like, it becomes the only way, and then learning stops, whatever it is, might stop because of that. And it's like, well, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It goes back to that anecdotal versus actual visual proof.
Yeah.
You know, like there has to be a factor of science, and every science needs a hypothesis and then a experiment. And you're actually showing the results where everybody can see it. That's the difference of being able to video it versus the anecdotal response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I went out and told you like, hey guys, the other day I dunked, you all could be like, prove it. Right? like, right?
You did?
Yeah. You know?
No, you didn't.
I got like, a C note here.
And that's the one thing. That's the funny thing about the archery community is that nobody really says, prove it. Nobody asks why.
Well, that's my favorite thing is I always compare. It's funny you say that with my, I don't want to say it's famous. It's not famous, but it's a common analogy I make is there's all these internet experts and all these like small town bar hunting experts you run into, and they're just like arrogant for no fucking reason.
Yeah. To protect their identity within the way it's that they learn.
But the thing is, what's cool about hunting But also, what's different about
hunting? Are we talking about media guys, or are we talking about guys in bars?
We're talking about both. We're talking about,
We're talking about anybody
that's cocky to you as like they're just cocky about hunting for no reason. Well, in basketball, if someone's like, "Yeah, I'm the best basketball player," you should have seen what I did. You'd be like, "All right, bitch, let's play 1-on-1 right now."
Yeah.
Well, the hunting, you're never hunting with that person.
Exactly.
But what you can compare is like when you have guys that like, "Well, I've done this. I've been using that broadhead for years." Like, well, it don't matter if you've been using it for years if you haven't killed fucking anything with it.
right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, resumes do matter to a point. And so if you're going to talk to me about hunting, how you're an expert in killing deer, and you've killed no fucking deer, don't fucking talk to me about being an expert in deer. You know?
Because you listen to somebody or whatever. We're in the information age, so I've...
Yeah, don't regurgitate something that you heard Steve Rinella say.
It's the echo chamber.
This podcast is probably the most... Maybe that I've ever kind of like talked on, say, like a subject like this. I don't like, but I've been down the road a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I don't like that, like when somebody doesn't have the, we talked about experience, like long time of it. They absorb all this information. Now they're an expert, but they haven't actually lived it.
Right.
They haven't actually seen it.
Yeah. You got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's great to absorb that information, but then go also do it so you have the experience, and that's what gives you the competence to back it up.
You can watch Bruce Lee videos all day, every day for 3 years.
I'm not going to hit a ping pong ball with nunchucks.
Get your ass. Exactly.
Yeah. You're not. I just got them dunking. Now do this.
Take shit out.
Knock yourself out. Yeah.
I studied him a lot with how I shoot a bow. I studied just how he used his body. His center mass, how he kept his shoulders.
Yeah.
I realized as my shooting was starting to evolve into something else, more along the lines of what I wanted to do, I was like, ooh, I think there's some martial arts. I've never done martial arts. I don't know anything, but like, who's the best at it? Oh, Bruce Lee's the best at it. Let me watch this guy strike. Let me watch him punch. What is he doing with his body?
Yeah.
Where's he getting his power from? All those sorts of things. So I watched him visually like that. Then I absorbed a lot of... A decent amount, I shouldn't say a lot, but a good amount of information with his thinking of that. And I'm like, okay, how can I take that into archery world?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for my shooting style of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know where my problem is. Definitely... You've been watching Bruce Lee. I've been watching Chuck Liddell fucking... Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Like, you're on another level.
Here's an interesting aspect of it, though.
Chuck Liddell's a man, by the way.
Like, and this is just my perspective, only mine, because I am not the typical industry person, you could say.
You're the PR guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy that, you know.
PR guy.
I'm usually the guy sitting on the couch out there. You know, and
damn good PR guy, though.
I'm
damn good.
The suit. He's the suit.
But the neat thing about it, and is why that we've really built this relationship with you guys and a couple other brands.
Because we like you, first and foremost.
Yeah, but it's...
That helps.
That helps a lot.
There's never, like, that echo chamber aspect of it. Like, we actually have, like, true conversations about it, and we also go into it, like, you know how to kill deer. You know how to kill giraffes. Jared's all right at it. Like, and
you'll never get away
from
that. And
Jared's talked to a lot of people that has killed all that shit.
Jared's killed more moose than I'll ever see. So, like, but we can all get
in
the
table. Did you say Jared or Garrett?
Garrett.
We can all get on a table
and put our dispositions aside and actually listen to each other.
For sure.
And that's the biggest issue with the hunting industry is that people approach conversations by trying to impose their opinion versus actually listening to somebody else's and being like, no, that's fucking bullshit.
Their dick's already on the backswing as it comes into the convo.
Exactly. And there's plenty of times somebody come up and talk to me and I let them talk for 10 minutes and I'm like, I don't agree with anything you say, but I'm not here to have a fucking cockfight.
We're not going to get into a fight about it.
You know, and that's why I like this platform is because you have different people on here, and everybody has different opinions, and it's not about that measuring contest. It's actually about
pandering.
I think you guys would be shocked for guys that are actually in an industry that were building stuff, the conversations that we would have. If Steve and I were here, if you recorded our conversation, I think you'd be shocked at how we think about a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And how twisted it is. I'm like, we're making it. Like, we make stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you hear your opinion. Like, once you make something, and then you can have an opinion about it. You know, this works or that doesn't. I'm like,
I mean, we're
your R&D, though.
You are. I mean,
we're your R&D. The guys in the field are some of your R&D.
Well, we learn all
the
time.
We say we by, like, the community of people that you supply.
Yeah, not one tail drone. It's like everybody there.
That's what I mean.
We learn, and
the consumer.
It's the consumer.
And I love Garrett's line. He told me this, I don't know, a year ago or 2 years ago. He's like, you know, there's one problem with this stuff. It works.
And
I was like, that's pretty good. It works. The industry
can say whatever they want, right? You can't. It does this. I'm like, it works. It's going to penetrate when you get there.
Yeah.
So you can do whatever you want, but you can't deny that.
Right.
You
for sure.
That part of it'll actually do it. Is it perfect? No.
But
is it? Is it more?
Are we closer to it?
Statistically, well, okay. I always look at if you have in your lifetime 100 shots at a deer. At deer, mm-hmm. right? So there's a hundred bucks and does in your future, and right now with the equipment that you're using, the chances are that you're going to put your hands on 50 to 60 of them. And if you could change and tweak some things to get it to 70, and I could change and tweak some things to get it to 80, and if I could change and really tweak some things to get it to 90, over your career, how much more success can you have?
Right.
And for me as an arrowsmith, my primary goal when I build this stuff is not for the hunter. It's not for marketing. It's for the animal. My job is to kill them as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So my 100%. Only concern is I don't care. I am not – people are like, oh, you preach single bells. I'm back. I don't preach anything. I went with that design because we couldn't find anything. And if I did find
when
something
it comes
that worked
to
better,
pure penetration,
I would build it. Like, and we look, and we can't find it, right? And that head goes back.
We didn't talk about the stats of, like, the 50s. I think you had a Wisconsin report of deer not recovered, and now they did one recently.
There's a bunch.
I think that's worth bringing up.
Yeah, we were going to get into that and forgot.
So I think
we got off on a tangent.
Imagine us.
No way.
Yeah, we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
Chuck Liddell.
Chuck Liddell, Bruce Lee.
Damn it, Chuck.
So Ashby actually brought this up to me and then kind of got me on this path. We're very similar in that. Somebody will say something and then I got to go do the research and find out for myself. So some of this used to be on our webpage. Some of it's been taken down where guys can still go back and research it. But several states over the years since the mid to late 50s have done wound loss ratio reports on whitetail deer.
Mm-hmm.
And in those wound loss ratio reports, it's usually reported Wisconsin's the number one state that's done it. They don't do it every year. But in those wound loss ratio reports, these are reported wound lost. So that's a guy actually admitting that he lost a deer.
Yeah.
So well, let's figure out what that float number is in there. Right? Yeah. From guys saying, I never hit him. Right.
Right. Right.
So that there's that. So that's deer hit to deer recovered. So the last big one that I saw was in 2005. And it was a report from state and wound loss. I believe it was Wisconsin. And you have any idea what that number was?
Wound to loss?
That's animals hit to animals recovered with a bow and arrow.
So how many they actually recovered? And
percentage-wise.
In what year?
This was 2005.
2005 had been low because that's that speed expandable life.
Right.
So, I bet you hit to recovered, the percent of recovered to hit?
22.
It's not that low.
I don't even...
he told me this a while ago, so I'm not
going to tell. Let's go 63%.
It's 48%, so half. Half the deer hit weren't recovered. Wow. That was reported. And so we touched on it very lightly.
So wasn't it like 1956 or something?
So the first report was 1956. I'm going to get to that.
Okay. All right.
So back to my own personal beliefs and ethics on this stuff. So I had mentioned before that I was at Ducks Unlimited. So when I was at DU about that same time, there was a really big push for not shooting hens. Right, because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been on, and I was a big guy inside DU waving that flag, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, so I'm already kind of into that. And that was one of those things when someone, I saw that report and I'm like, 48% of the deer hit are lost. And I'm like, if we don't police this ourselves, somebody else is going to do it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do it for us, we're not going to like it. I guarantee it. And this is something that we can very easily clean up and fix. So back to Jared's point, I think the first report's 1956, Wisconsin. Wound loss ratio, everybody's shooting 50-pound bare bows.
Not a compound.
Shooting fixed two blades, shooting wood arrows, probably.
One blade.
Right. One blade, shooting, you know, Fred Bear style, you know, 10 grains of arrow weight per pound of bow. You know, pretty standard stuff. Want to know what the wound loss ratio was in 1956? No, less people, right?
Less people.
Probably better hunters.
Probably on better average, woodsmanship right, of right, following right, up.
Better
too.
Hunters
There's
on
some
average.
Variables there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But it's still a statistic.
Yeah.
So you want to guess what the wound loss ratio
was? I'll guess. I'll go. What was it before? 47?
48%.
48%. And I'll go 17%.
16%. So, and the only thing, they're shooting 50-pound bows. The only thing different was arrows and broadheads that we could look at. Or that's what, so we were like.
That rules everything else out.
Right. So yeah. We were like, how can we
just
statistically.
Lesser powerful bows.
And so, and also for me. Marketing degree, but I was telling Jared, I'm one class away from a minor in statistics. So statistically, I like to look at things and how that, and that comes back to out of 100 shots, how many of these are going to be kills?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we really started looking at for guys is how can you increase that odd for yourself and decrease that odd of loss on mm-hmm. the animal side, right? Mm-hmm. If we're going to hit them, we want to kill them. That's why we hit them in
course.
The first place.
Yep.
Right. So how can we do that? And that was really a lot more of this Ashby stuff on, hey, we just want to – so now let's take that. So now we want to kill them more. Mm-hmm. How the hell do we do that?
Kill them 8 times.
Right. So and so the first thing that we came to was penetration.
Jared,
right? I can't kill them without penetration, right? Arrows kill through laceration, through penetration, right? We cut mm-hmm. as we penetrate.
Right.
If we don't cut or we don't penetrate, we don't kill them. Mm-hmm. Right? If any of those two stop. So we wanted to make an arrow that could drive a broadhead that could lacerate and penetrate no matter what we hit got in our way. So that was the general idea of things we were chasing because we thought if we could do that, our statistical odds of success of killing that animal, no matter where we hit them, is going to go up.
Right.
So it became more of how can we play the mathematics game to make sure that we get those odds up as high for the hunter.
Right.
It's bow hunting. It's imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
We all do it. It's an incredibly imperfect sport, right? Things go wrong. Things go wrong on tape that we can't explain. See it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how it did that.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about losing animals. You'll see arrows enter some places and where they come out. You're like, how the hell did it make that S turn in there, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know what it hit. Yeah. So we just want to increase, or our philosophy is we want to increase your odds as high as possible, whatever that is. Following those Ashby 12 steps, and you kind of hit on this, do you have to shoot 650? No, but the higher I can get, the more weight you shoot, statistically, it just starts getting better. The better broadheads you shoot, statistically, it just starts getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter the manufacturer, and that's probably not a good thing for a manufacturer to say. If you
it's a great thing, actually.
I think it's a good thing, honestly.
If you follow those rules, no matter who makes it, it's going to work better. So you don't have to be brand loyal on any of this.
Right.
If you follow those steps, you're going to kill more deer. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't really even argue it at this point in this conversation. Yeah. But it's mic drop right there.
Yeah. Exactly what that was.
Unhook that mic and
I don't know how to do this, but Kirk got mad at me if I drop his mic.
I'm like, that's a $600 mic. Okay.
We get another one.
No, man. I love it. This conversation was fantastic. This podcast was a ton of fun.
We could do another 4 hours, I bet.
We do have to do a follow up podcast for sure. Where can people find you?
Grizzlystick.com, STIK. We're on the web, so you know that's probably the easiest place.
Just Google it.
We're Google me. We're all consumer direct, so no dealers. Everything you're calling us, we're building everything internally. All your arrows, everything custom. So
love it.
And we've been doing that since 98. So
it's very cool.
I actually called Garrett before he knew I was with Whitetail Adrenaline just to like gauge how he was with customer service, treating me like I was his best friend.
I love it.
You don't know that, but I did.
We tried to do that for everybody. It was awesome. We just take it.
All of a sudden, I got 4 trial arrows in my at home.
And I don't mean to beat up on pro shops, but a lot of times you hear guys, and I'm like, from my own experience, the pro shop experience is, doesn't matter where it is in the country. I walk in the pro shop. There's 4 guys at the counter drinking coffee. I walk around for 15 minutes. Nobody acknowledges me, and I walk out. Right, that's my pro shop experience in a lot of places. Yeah, now, there's really good pro shops, but that's and I'm like, well, we don't want to do that. And not only do we not want to do this, people have a lot of questions, and the only way we can do this is explain. And that was always a big fear of me at the beginning, was somebody would ask me a question I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that always got. I didn't ever want to get caught. Like, I don't know, And if I do, my answer is, I don't know. I'm not going to make up stuff. I'd rather have that.
I'm not here to lie to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a different way. I think overall more guys are going to, we talked about this, the cat's out of the bag with this heavy high FOC thing.
Yeah.
The industry can try to quash it as much as they want.
The ancient secret is out.
And then guys are like, it's so new. I'm like, yeah, it's only been around like 10,000 years. This is not new. And I tell you,
it's new in terms of our lifetime, but if you actually study it, it's not new. They
compound.
You got to think about it too. Like when I study these ancients, they didn't have Instagram. They didn't have World Wide Web.
They
weren't communicating. They were keeping all their trade secrets secret. But it's like there's some things that all of these were like, ooh, for penetration, this is what we need.
Yeah.
And they didn't share that. Like, you'd be killed in some of these cultures.
It's literally life and death for those guys.
We wouldn't be here.
It's homeland security.
Yeah, we wouldn't
That's a great point.
That's exactly Jared, what it was.
Where can people find you, man? Where are you at?
Well, I'm
probably through me.
PR guy knows him.
Tuck behind my computer sometimes.
Yeah.
The company you can find what? Yeah, I am now. Yeah, moved to Des Moines. The company Whitetail Adrenaline. We'll get more active on social media here now that we're into hunting season.
Yeah.
But we're on Instagram and Facebook,
and TikTok.
We're not on there every day.
We have a pretty good following on TikTok, oddly enough.
We probably will now as we
get
11 people.
Yeah,
9 TikTokers.
Yeah.
Nine TikTokers. I've never been on TikTok, like I said. Nah, so I don't know.
Stay off.
Just like Jared didn't know he was on our intro. He didn't know he had a TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. Very flattering.
100,000 followers.
Awesome. I didn't know that. It's really not that good.
You've only been on there for 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
PR Paletta, where can they find you?
Mostly behind the scenes herding cats, and the cats are going to be Jared and Tanner and Chansey and
cats.
Yep.
Is Chansey out there cheating with lead weights and stuff and walleye?
Yeah,
tournaments?
Yeah. Chansey just caught a 47-pound bass.
Yeah,
that was 14 inches.
Nice.
So we're pretty excited about it.
Yep. And he didn't win. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Cheating better. Rick.
No, people can find me at PR guy Paletta. And actually, I got to give credit to you guys. You are the
branding
person.
Branding him the PR guy.
So, long story short, I don't think Kurt and these guys knew my name. So, they just called me PR guy until they actually knew my name.
Well, I was like, dude, you're like the PR guy. I was like, no, because I remember at Nebraska, I was like, we're just going to start calling you PR guy.
Yeah.
And then PR guy Paletta just has a ring to it.
Well, yeah. PR Paletta is
PR
perfect.
Paletta, yeah.
It's perfect.
So, mostly I'm the guy behind the scenes with Whitetail Adrenaline. And if you ever call the phone number on Whitetail Adrenaline, you get me. So, I'm the guy that
that's a bad thing
up.
To say.
Not
true.
Say your phone,
true.
Don't say
you're
that.
You're gonna get called. What about this FOC I heard about?
Hey, man, I heard you on WC. Well, you said you had someone recognize you in Nashville.
Yeah, this was crazy. So I was in Nashville. I have a couple of good friends of mine that are artists down there, so I try to sneak down there once in a while and watch them perform. And I'm wearing a working class bull hunter shirt. And a guy comes up to me and goes, hey, you're PR guy. You're Paletta. PR Paletta, aren't you? Paletta. And I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, how do you know those guys? I'm like, man, wait till adrenaline's got to get a little bit better with our marketing.
He knows you from WCB, but
he had no way. And I'm like, oh, I'm part of white tail adrenaline. The guy goes like, who? Oh, okay, cool.
Jared?
Yeah. Jared Sheffield? Who the hell is that?
And then we got TikTok.
I don't he didn't say, I already did Subway. I don't That's know Jared. Good. I don't guess.
Don't compare to me to Subway guy.
Isn't he in federal prison for
Yeah.
Child?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's
He was focusing on other 6-inch subs, so.
Hey. Fuck that guy.
Yeah,
Eric, we know where to find you.
Dark turn.
Murdersgiraffe.com.
Yep.
The bearded.
Yep.
Yeah. Black giraffe. Yep.
Bearded face killer.
It was a black giraffe, for the record. So
nice.
Nothing to do with race. It's just the color.
The color of it.
Yeah, it just happened to be there. So
thanks for clarifying that.
Thank you guys for being here on the podcast.
Awesome.
Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It was a blast.
It definitely awesome. Got me thinking about
it. Popped my cherry for podcasts. I think I'm just going to retire.
2-hour podcast is going to lead us right into another part two here soon. So yeah. We got to do this more
often. Okay, let's get a beer. Nice.
And another one.
Everyone, thank you so much for listening. Hope you learned something, had some fun, had some laughs. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you. Later.
Search for the one they call King, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.